Hello and welcome to the Weekly Stuff Podcast with Jonathan Lack
and Sean Chapman.
We are here as always to talk about stuff this week. It's kind of a two-podcast week.
Yeah, in a way.
Sort of. They're kind of back-to-back. Last week on Friday, I believe, was when it was released, we did an episode that was a Metal Gear Solid series retrospective.
Yes.
So the Metal Gear Solid series, obviously very famous, very historical. We talked about all the games in the series.
All the main games.
All the main games. Yeah. We didn't talk about, like, portable ops.
Yeah, like Metal Gear Acid.
Yeah, which, that should really be the title of all of them, because it's like they're made on acid, yeah. Anyway, but we promised when we did that we were going to do a fuller episode talking about Metal Gear Solid V, The Phantom Pain, and we were planning to do this at the end of this week, sort of as part of another episode where maybe we would talk about some other topics this week, like some of the Tokyo Game Show news and maybe the Doctor Who premiere and stuff, but we both finished Phantom Pain.
Yes. I finished it last night.
Yes, I finished it a couple days ago. We've talked about it extensively already, and I think we realized this needs its own episode.
Yeah. And it's something that I feel like we just need to get off our chests.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we can talk about more fun stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about The Phantom Pain. If you have not listened to last week's episode and you haven't played The Phantom Pain yet or don't want to hear a spoiler-filled discussion, we did do a good, like, 25-minute spoiler-free review. No spoilers at all, so if you want to hear our thoughts on the game, the basics haven't changed. That is reflective of our opinions.
Because I was actually almost done with the game when we did that podcast. Like, I had no idea I was as close to the ending as I was.
Neither of us knew we were that close, because the game doesn't give you a whole lot of indications.
Yeah.
So... All right, so listen to that if you want to. Today, like I said, we're going to be spoiler-filled. Do a couple of little things before we get started with that. First off, I'm realizing, now that I'm doing my first bit of public speaking for the day, I've been, like, half deaf in my left ear all day because water got in my ear in the shower, and it's not coming out, and it's really tough to talk when you're deaf in one ear.
Well, you should just fight through it, Jonathan.
I'm going to fight through it, but if I sound weird, it's because I can't really hear myself fully.
You just sound weird to yourself. It's fine.
Okay, that's
fine.
Good. All right, so what else is going on? Sean, I just saw you were playing Destiny a little bit.
Yes.
I talked about it a little last time, but I've gotten to level 19 in the new 2.0, and you've played a little bit of it. What do you think?
I really like it, yeah. Like, I'm really excited for the Taken King, like, getting some new content in there. But yeah, I started a Warlock character, because I haven't... Like, the only character I've played extensively is just my Hunter character that I started this with. And I played both the Warlock and the Titan a little bit in the Alpha and Beta... But so this is my first time in like a year doing anything in the game that's not like Hunter related, and there's so much stuff that I just completely forgot about. Like, it's been so long since I leveled up in Destiny. Like, I just I forgot what that was like. It's been like literally it's been like basically a fucking year since the last time that happened. So it's been really fun just like getting into Destiny again in that way and seeing some of those parts of the game that's like the, because the game's so different when you're like going through the story missions for the first time as opposed to like the end game stuff. And so that's really fun. And yeah, I guess my just brief impressions of Destiny 2.0 is that I think it's not like insane, like they haven't completely remade the game. It's not like World of Warcraft's like Cataclysm expansion or something, which completely retooled the entire like early game for WoW. But this does make a couple of really interesting and important changes that I do think like help you get through the campaign and give you sort of some more motivation and make things a lot clearer. It's stuff like the quest system that they put in. It's a really small thing, but it does just sort of like give you a little bit of motivation to go like just go to the missions. It sort of ties the missions together a lot better and forces you to like go back to people like your like Warlock trainer and people like that in the game to sort of like create some in like a relationship with those characters a little bit. Like, again, it's not huge, but it's a little something, and that little something definitely does help.
Yeah, absolutely. So, it's weird, because I've level capped before a Hunter and a Warlock. So, I've done this a lot.
Yeah.
And I started another Hunter character on Xbox, because I moved from playing PlayStation to Xbox, and I didn't have my Hunter. So, anyway. So, I've done a lot of the early content before, and now I'm playing a Titan for the first time. Which, again, I played the Titan in, like, the beta, but I haven't played it since. And for one, love the Titan. Titan might be my favorite class in a lot of ways. I just love the way it moves. That melee, just fucking
the
punch to the face.
The punch is good. Yeah.
It's so good. I have a video I recorded of me fighting with like a Vandal, and I'm just, I punch, he punches, I punch, he punches, and it goes on for like 30 seconds.
Nice.
It's great. Somehow I beat him. It was like just a slugfest. Anyway, I really love the Titan, but what's interesting to me, thinking about the changes, before I get into what I was going to say, is just, I love that it feels like since the game launched, so much in Destiny has changed, except those basic mechanics of, like, yeah. how you move, how you shoot, because that was this rock-solid core the game always had. And I think my takeaway from 2.0 so far, and hopefully with the Taken King, is I feel like the rest of the game is finally getting up to that level.
Yeah.
Of, like, this is a game worthy of what really might be the best first-person shooter mechanics ever made.
Yeah.
I really think you could say that and not be exaggerating.
Yeah, just, I would say so.
Yeah. They're so satisfying. This is so fun. I've gotten my Titan up to level 19, and what's most interesting to me about it, I agree with what you said, it's not like they've remade the game, but because of the changes, like having Nolan North voice Ghost, and having that quest system, which means you interact with sort of the people in the universe more, and you see more little bits of story, it does feel like I'm playing subtly a different game.
Yeah.
Especially because the later you get into it, you realize they've taken all the vanilla Destiny story missions and rearranged them. So, like, the main quest line that brings you to the Black Garden, like, I'm at the Black Garden mission, and it's only about half the story missions. Like, you do two or three on every planet, and then a lot of, like, missions I know very intimately from playing Destiny a lot, I haven't seen yet, and I'm really curious to see where they're going to crop up. Or, like, the Sword of Crota mission, which is a popular one, obviously, is where you get the sword. That's now the start of the Dark Below mission, which makes total sense, because it belongs there. So it's like the story is more concentrated, too. Like, the main thrust of what you're doing in Vanilla Destiny, which is, you know, trying to destroy the Black Garden, that makes way more sense now, because you're just doing the missions relevant to that.
Yeah, and it does feel like, I'm curious, because have you not encountered any of the House of Wolves stuff in your...
No.
New playthrough yet.
Well, yeah. I got the place at the reef where I can go. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, I'm curious where those, like, if, like, how those are going to fit into the quest structure. Because I really like, because I just got to the point where I did, like, the first couple of Dark Below missions.
Yeah.
And I really like how they work those into the main campaign when you're, like, playing it through from the beginning. It's just, like, it does have this sense of, like, one, it makes it feel like you spend more time on Earth, which I like, because I think Earth is probably, like, kind of my favorite area in the game. And it feels... And I guess there's this sense of, like, it feels like you can kind of go do what you want at that point, that there's a couple of, like, you could go, oh, I could either go, like, do this strike if I want to get some experience, or I could do the Dark Below missions, or I could just move on to Venus, and there's, like, and it feels like there are kind of a couple of small stories being told with all of those, and it's stuff that's, like, it's, again, it's very light, but the recontextualization definitely makes a difference for me.
Yeah, it's just taking, like, all this stuff that I think was often good on its own, but as a whole didn't add up to much.
Yeah, it was just kind of a big jumble.
Yeah, and making it add up to something. So, like, I think if someone were to pick up Destiny today, which would be a great idea, because you can just get, like, the disc and it's got everything.
Yeah, for $60 you can get Destiny, Taken King, and both the expansions.
Which is a good deal.
Yeah, yeah, really good deal.
Considering Taken King on its own is $40.
Yeah.
So, pricing structure does not make total sense. But anyway, you can get all that. And I think if you were to play Destiny today, I don't think you would ever guess the Dark Below stuff was an add-on.
Yeah.
You would just say, okay, this is kind of like in other RPG kind of games. I have this quest line, I have this quest line.
Yeah.
I meet different people, they give me different things to do. I like how you have to interact with, like, the other Vanguard leaders, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Like, Ikora Ray has something to do, and the Titan guy has something to do.
Yeah, I've been talking a lot to the Titan dude, and I barely even recognize that the Titan dude is there, because he's at, like, the far end of the table. So I never made it that far. Like, I only got to the middle. I only ever got to Nathan Fillion. Yeah. That's as far as I ever got.
I forgot the Titan dude was Lance Reddick, who's an actor I love. He's got that great, deep voice. Yeah. He's awesome. Yeah, all three of those Vanguard guys. I hope they maybe will record more lines with them someday, because those are all great actors.
I feel like in the trailer for Taken King, I'm pretty sure I saw the Nathan Fillion guy.
Okay.
In the trailer, yeah. And like a cinematic, so I think that they're going to have some stuff.
You can get Nathan Fillion for your video game whenever you want.
Yeah.
And I love Nathan Fillion.
Yeah.
He's awesome for that, yeah. But you can.
And then other stuff that's like, I really love, they have like the way they've sort of like put in some of the like exotic blueprint stuff, and that, and like the way that they store shaders and like create these like collection things for you. I really like those, because it's sort of, because with my hunter who's at the level cap, that's kind of what I've been doing a little bit over the past couple of weeks. It's just like playing a little bit like every other day, and like just sort of getting some strange coins and stuff, and just trying to get all the different exotics, because that's a fun thing to do, because I think all the exotics in the game are really interesting. And so it's nice that they have like a spot that sort of just like keeps track of that and shows you what you don't have yet. That's really cool. And then I also, like a small thing, but I always love this, it's the same thing that when I played World of Warcraft when the expansion came out, I always thought it was cool, is the way that like menus and stuff are slightly different. Like, it's because it's like the first time you load up the character screen, it's like the character screen background is a little bit different. Like, there's a little more color in it, and it's like, whoa, because you've seen that, like, for fucking, like, dozens of hours I've spent staring at that cumulatively, and all of a sudden that screen's different, or, like, some of the icons are different and stuff right. like that, that they've sort of just spruced up.
They've given it all a little more vibrancy, it moves a little more.
Yeah, like, the galaxy map is different and stuff like that. I just like the little, a couple little changes to make you feel like, oh, like, the game's different now.
Yep, absolutely. I like that sort of your different armor things, like, so for the hunter, you know, you have your cape, and for the titan, you have your little... sash thing. That is now gives you a defense stat.
Yeah.
Your ghost shell gives you a defense stat. It's all these cosmetic things that I didn't even think about much before because they're not good for much. And now they have both the cosmetic side and a defense stat, and that makes them worth more, which is cool. It's just like the whole game, I feel less guilty while playing it. Because I definitely got to a point with Year One Destiny where it's like, I'm just doing this to turn my brain off and kill time.
Yeah, like definitely like pre-House of Wolves Destiny for sure was like, oh, man. Like, because at least with House of Wolves, like, they added in some vectors where you could, like, get stuff easier with, like, the arena mode and stuff like that. Yeah, now it does feel like you can play the game for, like, a couple of hours in a day and make some progress, get some stuff, and have fun with it. And, yeah, and not feel like you're just, like, running on a treadmill getting nowhere, which is what, like, vanilla Destiny felt like.
Absolutely. I'm really excited to jump into Crucible, see what new stuff they've done there. I haven't yet.
I've heard that there's a new mode that people Rift. Say is really, really interesting.
Yeah. So, and I like Crucible a lot. It's just I often don't have time to play it. And certainly when I'm starting a new character, there's like other priorities. And I don't really want to jump into Crucible until I'm more comfortable with my character. But I like Crucible, so I'm excited to see where they go with that.
And also, maybe the greatest change is that you can just turn in the bounties from that quest stream. That's fucking awesome.
The greatest change is skipping cutscenes.
Yeah, I mean, I just haven't gotten to that point yet, because I'm just playing with a new character. You're probably right about that. But
no, it's turning in
there's something
the...
that's just like, oh, yes, I don't have to go back to that fucking robot every time I want to turn in, like, one bounty.
Well, one of my favorite things is that if, say you're stuck in a level, or you're, like, you're in a strike or something, and it's tough, and you finish a bounty, you're like, I really could use that experience
boost.
Yeah,
you can just pop it right there.
And like, get to level 18. It's like, yes!
Yeah, I did that when I played the the Devil's Lair Strike.
Yeah.
It was a good feeling.
Yep, absolutely. So, that's Destiny 2. Oh, and Nolan North, thumbs up?
Yeah, he's good. Like, it's not amazing, because I think the script for that character... I think, like, actually Nolan North's performance is so, like, good enough that I can actually see where the script is bad. Whereas with Peter Dinklage, like, the performance was so just sort of, like, adequate... that I felt like I couldn't tell where the writing was bad or the performance was bad. But like Nolan North, it's like, okay, that's some of those lines you just cannot say. Like some of these lines are way too goofy with like the Bungie's tendency to have like these like proper noun names for like the grave and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's hard for people to deliver those lines, but yeah, he's much more of a character now.
I just love those points where there's the iconic Peter Dinklage reading like, we've woken the hive!
Yeah, I got to that last
and
night,
seeing how does Nolan North handle it, and he mostly handles it like a sane person.
Yeah, he just sort of, he doesn't take it super
hive.
Over the top. Yeah.
We've woken the hive.
Yeah, and then you just go and find this like, oh yeah, that's like, that's how a voice actor would deliver this line.
Yep. Alright, well we will have much more to talk about Destiny in the weeks to come. Very excited for The Taken King. For now, let's go ahead and move on. I want to talk a little bit about a game that just came out that I've been playing, Super Mario Maker for the Wii U.
Right.
It's really good.
It seems so, yeah.
It's really fun. Like, I think... So, if you don't know what... basically, Super Mario Maker is this sort of level creation suite where you can take... you build, like, side-scrolling 2D Mario levels. There's, you know, four sort of... kinds of Mario levels you can build, which is the original Mario Brothers, Mario 3, Mario World, and New Super Mario Brothers, which is the 3D kind.
Yeah.
And you can work with any of those, and it's, you know, kind of a grid system, and you've got your different tools, and your different, you know, like your Goombas, and your Koopas,
and your blocks,
and your
stars, and all that nonsense.
And you can lay it all down. The game was originally going to ship with a kind of weird system where it would stop your progress, where it would give you a new set of tools every day for 9 days, and on day 9 you'd have the full suite, and it would kind of ease you into that. Which I think is I see the reason behind it, but it clearly was a little
impractical. It's a very Nintendo thing to do of, like... We're going to, like it's a good way to ease very casual players into that, but it's like, but you're locking out, like, the people who are going to play that game really intensely for, like, the first week they get it and maybe never go back to the game. It's like, maybe that's not the best system.
Yeah, so there's a day one patch where basically it allows you to, if you do an edit, a level edit for, like, 5 minutes, it'll bring you the new stuff. It's a little more complex than that, yeah. But you can look it up online. It's actually a little nebulous how things unlock, but you can do it pretty quickly if you want. You can also go into the system and just play with your clock, but that would take way longer, yeah. And it's unnecessary, so don't do that. I've seen, like, websites posting about that. It's like, you don't need to do that. The game will unlock for you. It's fine. But anyway, I kind of still, like, I haven't let it progress for me as far as it will let me at the moment, because I am still, like, I don't want to go too fast with it.
Yeah.
Because I realized right as I started playing it, the level creation suite is powerful enough and fun enough, and there's enough that I can do and enough creativity to express that I don't want to, like, ruin it for myself by going so far that I have too many options. Because, like, the first thing I realized was when it gave me that initial suite and I played with it a little bit, one of the things I wanted to do is, one of my favorite levels is 2-1 from the original Mario Bros. And so I was going to recreate that. So I got my 3DS out and loaded up that level, and I did a recreation of that. And just doing it with the basic tools, I could do that. And it was kind of cool because I learned, okay, now I feel like I've mastered this set of tools. Then maybe I'll do a level and, like, build upon that and do more with it. So I kind of like that, and kind of learning at each level, because even if it looks simple, there's a surprising amount of depth to it. But, yeah, and then I made my first original level after that, and one of the cool things I realized is that, like, so they've got those, it's tempting to say the different, like, kinds of Mario games are skins, but that's not what it is at all.
But
it's,
they play like those different Mario games. They do. So, like, do. If you're playing new Super Mario Brothers U, you have moves like the wall jump and stuff
you
would not have in the older games.
Yeah, and I wasn't sure how they were going to handle that, but it's really cool. On the fly, you can switch that, but of course, you could build a map that would be inaccessible to original Mario, but new Super Mario could do it.
Yeah, so, like, if you play a map online, it will be in, like, the template, like, Mario template that it was designed for. Like, you can't play a Mario Brothers 3 level Mario Brothers 1 style, necessarily.
Right.
Because also some of the, like, the items and stuff don't carry through for all the games.
Right, and I think that's actually really cool. That's one of the deepest parts of this, is that I like making levels, like, really tied to the kind of game I'm working with. So, like, the second level I made was one where once I realized that wall jump thing, and I'm like, oh, I can really make a level that's around that. So I did one where Mario has to wall jump to the sky, and then I had a kind of sky course that then came back down, and I realized also one of the suits he has in that that's different than in original Mario Brothers is this kind of propeller suit thing that's from, I think that's actually from, like, New Super Mario Brothers 3D Land, but then they must have carried it into the Wii U game, which I've never played, so I've only played the New Super Mario Brothers games, the original DS one and the original Wii one, so I never played the later ones, but anyway, so they have that, like, propeller suit thing, and so then I did a thing where to get to the thing at the end, you have to get the propeller suit and, like, fly across the screen. And I like, that also gives you direction of, like, I can use the specific tools for this, like, game skin, and then make a level around that, and that gives you some ideas.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to work with. And then, like, I think this, what's also cool is that you could enjoy this game and not ever touch the level editor, because you could just play all the levels Nintendo has given you. You could go online and see people's levels. I've done that a little bit, and most of them are creative and fun. I've seen a couple of annoying ones, but...
And yeah, it's also something where I feel like the game is so early that, like, any sort of, like, filtering system has not fully kicked in yet, that I'm sure if you're just, like, going through, like, their playlist thing, like, it's like 100 Mario Challenge or something, right? Like, I'm sure a lot of those levels, you just will get to ones where it's like, this is the stupidest level ever, and just don't upvote that one or whatever the system is. Like, that system needs to work itself out.
Right, exactly. We're very early in this. But, like, you know, there's this system. This is something they need to fix, too. To share your level with someone else, you need to give them your course ID. That's fine in theory. It's just that the course ID is like an old NES password that goes on for 3 screens.
It's like, it's big 12 or 15-digit code or something.
It's really too long, and I wish you could just search by name, because... Yeah. I mean, I'm sure some people will name their courses the same, but you could search by name and creator or something and find it.
Yeah, or, like, have a tagging system where people can say, it's like, oh, this is a Super Mario Brothers 3 level, or this is, like, a, like, autoplay level and stuff like that. Like, because Little Big Planet and those kinds of games allow a tagging system that...
Cool.
Like, it seems like Nintendo is so gun-shy on internet stuff, it seems like that's just not their, like, where they're at.
Yeah. It's fine so far. They've done a good job, I think, with the basics of it. There's more they could do, obviously.
Yeah.
But I did, like, you know, last night on Twitter, one of the people I follow on Twitter said, oh, here's my first level that I did seriously and I think is okay. And I put that in and played it, and it was good, and it was, like, it was cool. It's kind of inspiring to see what other people are doing with it, because that then feeds your own ideas, which hopefully can feed everyone else's. It is, overall, what I love about the game is it is this big celebration of creativity, and I just love... You know, like, the first thing they have you do is work with a revamped version of World 1-1, which we all know by heart.
Yeah.
And looking through that and just realizing, oh, there is so much thought that went into this, you know, most simple of levels.
And then you just go and you make all the Goombas giant and give them all wings and say, fuck 1-1! I'm just going to make this the most hard level ever.
Absolutely. So, yeah, that's what I did, is I made my World 2-1 remake, and then I did one called World 2-1 Remix and just threw a bunch of shit in there and made it crazy and added some fun stuff. So, like, one of the interesting things is, like, amiibo support. So if you have any of the, like, Smash Bros. Amiibos, like I have Samus, you can put Samus on there, and then you will get a mystery mushroom that will turn Mario into Samus. And
well, it'll only play in the Mario 1 skin, right? I'm pretty sure that's...
Yeah, I think it's only in the Mario 1 skin. Yeah, that seems right. So, but when you do that, and then it, like, gives you sounds, like the level clear stage then is then... the Metroid sound song, and stuff.
Yeah.
But what was the coolest thing about this, though, so, like, and then it shows you the screen where you're unlocking, like, so, okay, you have the Metroid as, like, a stamp, and there's, like, the 40 you can get. And I was like, oh, man, I don't want to, it's like, this is, like, they are just tempting people to go buy 40 amiibos.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is that if you play online and someone else has made a stage where, like, they have you turn into Link, you will play as Link in that stage, and then you might unlock it in your game. So... you don't need to buy 40 amiibos.
Yeah, like, the amiibos are just faster ways to unlock the skins.
Yeah. And I actually did buy a new amiibo with this game. I wanted to bring it and show it. It's upstairs. I'll maybe next week. But, like, it's the 8-bit Mario amiibo.
Right, yeah.
Which is really cool. Like, I thought, I was just to buy a GameStop the other day, and it was the day it came out. I'm like, oh, I wonder if they probably don't have it. But I went in and checked, and they did. And I got it. Because it's a, unlike some of the other amiibos, which are just kind of small and shitty, this one's really big and, like, blocky, and it just looks cool, and I like having it on my desk. Like, he's not on just a little black circle. He's on a pipe. It's really neat. I like that one.
Yeah.
What it does in the game is not as cool as I thought it would be. Like, it's, again, just for 1-1, or for original Mario, and it's this big mushroom that makes him big, but not all that powerful. So, I don't know. It's not right, like the big mushroom from New Super Mario Bros. And I was hoping it would give you that, because that's a iconic mushroom from New Super Mario Bros., but that's not in here yet, as far as I can tell. So, anyway. But, still, so I've still got a lot to unlock, a lot to play with. I just got the Mario 3 skins last night. And I'm excited to do that, because graphically, that's probably my favorite Mario game. I really love how that looks. But, like, what's funny, you know, I was playing a Mario World stage online the other day, and that's the Mario game I'm probably the least familiar with. I've never, like, played Mario World all the way through. And there's just some systems in that I'd forgotten or not known about, and that was interesting. So there's a lot of depth to it, which I like.
Yeah, because it's like, you don't think about how, like, some of those, like... Because Mario World is pretty different. Like, it does, like you said, it has different things. Like, you have the weird spin jump and shit like that the other games don't have. That, like even the games forward don't necessarily have. That all the games have their own quirks.
Mm-hmm.
I wish that they had made it so that if you played a Super Mario Brothers 1 level, you couldn't go left. I wish that, like, they just, like, went all the way with it. Just said, fuck it. Like, you just don't get to go backwards like in the original Mario Brothers.
Yeah, I mean, the remakes of those games took that out, and I can see why they did that. But yeah, I mean, one of the cool things is the game looks beautiful. Like, if you... The way, like, all the different engines look just running on, like, the HDTV versus the gamepad, it just looks really nice. And it was kind of cool to make my World 2-1 and then play it kind of in HD.
It's widescreen and everything. Yeah.
And you kind of realize, though, like, okay, it was fun to make World 2-1. If I wanted to do a better remake of this, though, I'd have to change the proportions, because on a widescreen TV, this isn't right.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting. You have to account for that, too, a little bit, I think. But it makes, you know, this is definitely the best use of the Wii U gamepad ever, because I don't think you could do this game any other way.
Yeah, or at least it would be really arduous, the level creation stuff.
Yeah, but now it's really smooth, and I've done a little where I'm just watching TV, and I just play it all on the gamepad, but it is nice to have the TV there, too, so when you flip to just playing, which is super seamless, you can go to the TV, and you get a better view of it, and feel how that'll work. So I've made a couple levels. What I'm going to do is with... this episode, I'll put their course ID on the episode description page on jonathanlack.com if you want to download those. And maybe I was just thinking, as a fun podcast tie-in, if I have time, I'm going to, like, work on making one level a week, and maybe I'll do one for the podcast and put that out.
Yeah.
If any of our listeners own a Wii U and play Mario Maker.
Yeah, it seems like this is maybe a thin slice of the audience.
If I don't hear from anyone, I probably won't do that forever, but I'll do that for a couple of weeks, just because I'm playing it anyway, and that could be fun, and it'll give me something to work towards. Like, I have to make a real good level here or something. So
yeah, it's interesting, because I don't have a Wii U, and I don't even have I have a fondness for Mario, but since I never really grew up with it, I grew up with Sonic, I don't have, like, a nostalgic adoration for it, but this is the one game that I look at, and I'm like, it looks like it's so well done, it kind of makes me want to have one. Like, it just, like, even though I know, like, I'm also not, like, a level creator guy, it's like, but it's just, it's so well done. Like, the UI and everything is so slick, it just makes it, like, yes.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like, it's perfect.
When I made one of my levels the other day, which I worked on for like 2 days, I wasn't planning on sitting down and making the whole level. You just fall into it because it gives you all the tools. And it is like, the level creation is a game on its own. Yeah. It's like,
because it gives you the tools and then it gets out of your way. Because it's like the same thing with like Little Big Planet and stuff, is that the level creation tools are so robust that you can make kind of anything, but they're also so robust that it's like it's impossible to get into them unless you really dedicate yourself to figuring out how they work.
Yeah.
It seems that like Mario Maker is more kind of like how like Forge was for me in Halo, where you know, like, it's not this, you can't make like the most, you can't like turn Halo into Tetris, or in this you can't turn Mario into Tetris or Pac-Man or something. Like, you can make it a little bit weird, but you can't completely change the game. Like, it's always going to be a Mario platformer. But it's like, you can make the Halo level you want, or you can make the Mario level you want, and just have fun while you're making it, because you can constantly just be jumping it in and testing stuff out, and that kind of stuff. It seems like it's just, it's like, it seems like it's a really, really well done game.
Absolutely. So I'll probably have more to say on that next week, but for now, let's go ahead to something that I would not describe as a really, really well done game.
A thing that I would agree with, yeah.
Yeah, all right. Metal Gear Solid V, The Phantom Pain. The long-awaited, apparently final installment in the Metal Gear series, after Hideo Kojima apparently murdered and or slept with a Konami executive's wife. in any case, this is it. This is the end of Metal Gear. We talked a little bit about it last week, but let's like kind of recap. Sean,
right.
Would you say this is a glorious end to the Metal Gear franchise?
I think it's a fitting conclusion to how I've felt about this franchise in so many ways.
Explain.
And it's tragic. It's a tragic end. It's just, it's, I feel like the Metal Gear franchise for me is like every single game has had so much potential, and it's always kind of fallen apart for me in different ways. Metal Gear Solid 5 has fallen apart the most for me in a way that, like, I despise this game now, even though there's a lot, like, there's a lot of stuff in this game that I think is really well done. Like, some things that no other game has done as well as this game does, even with that. Like, the stuff that this game fucks up, it fucks up so bad that I kind of hate it.
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, let's start there, then. What does this game do well? I mean, this is a very acclaimed game. Obviously, we disagree, I think, with the general critical consensus on this right now.
Yeah.
But let's start there. What are the things that you really enjoy about this game and think it does spectacularly?
I mean, it's like the sandbox-style action stealth gameplay. Like, it's, I said this on our last podcast, that this game really shines, especially like early on when you don't have everything unlocked and you kind of see how sort of like futile the progression system is, which is where like all that stuff breaks down. But early on, when you're still unlocking new, like, different kinds of gadgets and trying to figure them out, it's that sense of like dropping into a mission, infiltrating a base you've never seen before, and like using these new gadgets you've never used before, and playing with the AI and playing with the game systems to sort of to infiltrate a base, and then almost you always are trying to just extract a target through Fulton. And that, like, that style of gameplay, this game does so well. Like, it's kind of like a more stealthy version of, like, the modern Splinter Cell games, which I also really love, like Splinter Cell Conviction and Blacklist. Those are a little more action-y, and this is a little more stealth. But it does, it just sort of, it nails that sense of tactical espionage action, to use their, like, weird tagline, you know? Like, in that, it does so well. That, again, like, kind of better than anything else. Like, just, like, the number of different ways that the AI can react and the number of different ways that you can mess with the AI, it's a very, very fun sandbox to play in.
It feels like a good evolution of, like, the feeling you get playing my favorite game in the series, Metal Gear Solid 3, where, like, you're going through the jungle and, you know, you stay down low and then you go up on someone and try to, you know, get rid of him without his friends seeing, and then you feel you feel this sense of power, like, I am the sneaky master here.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can do this. And in 5, you know, at its best, you definitely feel that, where you just feel in complete control of Snake's body.
Yeah.
You can move however you want at whatever speed you want. You can, you know, go in really quiet, or you can go in, you know, hard and fast. And I don't think one is necessarily more legitimate than the other.
Yeah, it definitely, the game accommodates for a lot of different play styles.
Yeah. So, you know, I am, you know, Trank gun all the way.
Yeah.
Infiltrate, Trank, in this case, Fulton.
Yes.
You know, although eventually I got bitter and I would interrogate people, and no matter what, when I interrogated someone, I would stab them in the throat.
I definitely would get to the point where it's just like, I don't even wait for, like, their sentence to finish popping up on screen. It's just like, if you're not an A-plus level soldier, you're all dead. Like, I don't fucking care.
Well, it was like, at first I would kill them if I interrogated them and they didn't give me what I wanted. Yeah. And then they just all died.
Yeah.
But anyway, yes, you can do that. And I think some of the things they give you around the periphery, like the buddy system, is really good.
Yes.
Particularly, like, I use D-Dog the most just because I like dogs. I like D-Dog.
Yeah, D-Dog.
And he's just so useful because he marks everyone for you, and he can go kill enemies, which is great.
It's the best animation where he pulls, like, that knife out of his suit with his mouth and just, like, jumps up on a dude and slits his throat.
And I love how if you actually look at that animation, they put some thought into it. How would this dog get that knife out and use it? And it's great. And I would go through whole missions where I would just stay prone and go through and just have D-Dog kill everyone.
Get him, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what I love is somehow D-Dog has killed a lot of people, but he is still a loving and friendly dog.
He's the most adorable dog. Like, somehow he has, like, an eye patch, which you think would make him intimidating. It makes him that much cuter.
Yeah.
He's the cutest dog.
Yeah. And I didn't use Quiet much, but I think Quiet is clearly pretty useful, too.
Yeah, she's very versatile.
Yeah. And I didn't... I thought D-Horse controlled, like, mud, so I didn't use him much, but...
He's okay. I mean, I played a lot of Witcher 3, which has, like, really bad horse controls.
Yeah.
So, D-Horse, I was like, yeah, I'm okay with you, D-Horse. You're not Roach from Witcher 3. Like, we can do this.
But yes, I still like D-Horse as a character. You know, he gets you around. Mostly,
you
though...
You can make him poop.
Yes, you can make him poop. Mostly, D-Horse makes me think of all the time traversing Endless Wastelands.
Yeah, that's...
So... It's not D-Horse's fault. He did nothing wrong. He's a loyal companion, but he's tied to those negative memories.
It's true.
But no, I like all of that. And, you know, some of the... I agree the progression system is just gibberish at a certain point. But it is fun, some of the different weapons you can get and see how you can experiment with those.
Yeah.
And then the way the Fulton system works into things is great. So, yeah, just that moment-to-moment getting into those bases is great. And like, you know, I said last week on the show... I don't think there's anything in Phantom Pain that is as well designed as the Cuba base in Ground Zeroes.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of astoundingly designed spaces in this game.
Yeah. Like
there's some certain bases you go into that are just very well designed and laid out, and they can accommodate multiple mission types and things like that. So, you know, those like moment-to-moment infiltration things are well designed, and the basic control scheme is just... You feel in control, and you feel like, you know, you can tackle this however you want, and that's a tough thing for games to get right.
Yeah.
As I think the Metal Gear Solid series itself has probably shown in its evolution.
Yes, definitely.
So, yeah.
So, yeah, it's the gameplay I have no real complaints with. Like, just the raw feel of the stealth action,
yeah.
That stuff's really good. It's how they use it, and it's everything surrounding it that the more you play the game, the worse it gets.
Yes. And that's never what you want from a game.
Yeah, exactly. You want to, like, leave a game feeling satisfied and wanting more. Like, that's the ideal thing. This game did not accomplish that objective.
It's like making love. You want to feel satisfied and wanting more, not, this is getting worse the more we do it.
Yeah, this is getting worse the more we do it. And then you just, like, the last time is just like, I can't do this anymore.
I feel so much shame.
It's like, I'm sorry, I'm going to get a hotel. Like, we just need to figure things out.
That's
the point where I was at with Metal Gear Solid 5 at the end. It's just like, we need to, like, take a step back and rethink our relationship. Like, that's where we were.
Absolutely. So, it's such a big topic. I'm not sure where to even start, but I think your anger is more directed than mine. So,
okay.
In terms of where it breaks down, what is the core of that to you?
Like, where does it break down?
Where do we start the discussion of what's wrong with this game?
I mean, I just want to talk about the story.
Let's do that.
Right,
let's
now.
Do
let's
that.
Just get into, like, because that's the part that, like, when you finish it and you realize that that's how they're ending this game, that's where I was the most just, like, that was where when you had told me that when you finished the game you deleted it from your hard drive, like, when I finished it, I understood what you meant. Like, I didn't go that far because I have ample hard drive space, so, like...
I do, too, but
I'm not that vindictive about it, but I totally understand why when you hit that ending, you'd be so annoyed at the game that you'd just be like, nope, I'm just going to delete this.
Yeah.
Like, fuck this. This is awful.
So, before we get into the story, quick recap, just, you know, if we did talk a lot about the game mechanics and what's wrong with it, just the mother base and open world side of it, I think we'll get back into that later.
Yes, we will.
But... It's on the other episode, too. But let's talk about the story now, which we haven't touched on. And yes, the story is incredibly infuriating. The ending, of course, spoilers aho, Big Boss was never Big Boss. Nothing you did really mattered.
Yeah.
And beyond that, nothing happened in the story to justify a twist, but let alone any kind of emotional or narrative impact. The story is garbage.
It's so fucking bad. I do not understand... Like, it's something where I can understand why, like, review outlets and stuff like that gave this game really high scores. I can even understand giving it a 10 at some point if you just don't care about the story.
But the fact that, like, I read a lot of those reviews, and I, the only thing I got from that was that there was not a lot of story. I did not get the sense that this is a fucking terrible story. And not in the ways that I don't think that the other Metal Gear games have bad stories, because at least those have, like, an ambition and are trying to make a story. This one just has a complete, utter failure of a story I haven't seen since, like, Amazing Spider-Man 2, you know?
Absolutely.
It's, like, that level of just pure incompetence in the final product.
And even when the other Metal games, their stories break down, you can point to, oftentimes, dozens of great moments and character interactions and just bits of color and style.
And thematic ideas that, like, do develop themselves in some ways, even if I don't think they make it all the way there. Like, it tries. It, like, gives an honest, like, earnest attempt at it, you know?
You can't do that with this game at all. And the one mission people try to point to of, like, this is where it's at its best is the Mission 43, Shining Hearts Even in Death, or whatever it is.
Is that the zombie where you kill your zombie guys?
Yeah, you kill your zombie guys, and so you go into the hospital, you have to, or the quarantine zone, and you have to execute all of your soldiers who have been infected with the vocal cord parasite, which is evolving, and people are like, see, this is brilliant, because it's Big Boss, and he's finally turning bad and all that, and it's really emotional, because you're the player, you feel it. And that breaks down to, for me, on so many levels.
Every part of it's just fucked up.
One, it's not earned in the slightest, and we're going to talk about this more later, but, like, you know, none of your soldiers matter at all, because there really are no characters in this game by any reasonable, you know, literary definition of what a character is.
Yeah.
And so there's that. Two, if you get to that twist at the end, that really doesn't matter because he's not Big Boss.
Yeah. Yeah, so so it's like, because the character you're playing as, it doesn't even feel like it really ties into the future of the series.
Right.
Because they've just inserted this random Big Boss surrogate into the story by the time you get to the end.
Yeah.
So, like, all of his character development is meaningless in the perspective of the larger franchise, because that character, for all intents and purposes, is not actually present in the rest of the franchise. And any place you could say it's like, oh, it's actually him, is in Metal Gear 1, which nobody's fucking played that game. Like, I don't care who you are. Nobody has fucking played that game. That game is so old on a system that nobody in America had, because it did not fucking come out over here, that, like, relying on it tying into Metal Gear 1 without, like, really defining and recontextualizing the plot of that game is fucking awful.
Yes. And, you know, that scene, beyond that, nothing comes out of it. So nothing leads into it, nothing comes out of it, and it is rendered null and void by the twist at the end. So, like, I've seen people trying to compare it to, like, you know, the boss fight at the end of Metal Gear Solid 3, or the scene in the hallway where you're crawling along in Metal Gear Solid 4. And yes, those are fantastic scenes.
Yes.
And you know why? Because we care about Naked Snake and his conflict with the boss, and that this is emotional for him. And with Solid Snake, that's the culmination of a, you know, mini-game-long arc, and you feel kind of
there's
bad.
There's a huge amount of build-up behind both of those moments. Like, the entire game are leading to both of those moments.
Yes.
Nothing in this game, like, leads up to, builds up to, I mean, nothing in this game builds up to anything, because the story, what is there, is so completely disjointed that, like, by the time you get to the end, you don't even know it's the end. Like, literally, I had no fucking idea that I was at the end of the game. And then by the time you get to that moment, you have no idea that that moment's coming. You have no sense that that moment, like, in any, like, in a character sense or in a plot sense, makes any sense that it would just, like, appear, that it's like, all of a sudden, this is the mission I'm doing now. It just comes the fuck out of nowhere every single time they try to do that.
Absolutely. I mean, it was so funny. So you finished this yesterday, right?
Yes.
And I walked into the room. I was just walking downstairs, walking in the room, and you turned to me and said, well, this is tedious, because you were playing the hospital mission again.
Yeah, because
the
said, end of the game is you play through the opening cinematic again.
And I'm like, yeah, it is tedious. And he's like, how much more of this do I have left? And I'm like, this is the last mission. And you're like, no, it isn't.
Yeah.
And you, like, didn't believe me at first.
Because it seemed completely absurd, because I, like, because it was something where I had gotten to, that was the next mission I needed to play, and, like, last night, or, like, the night before I had finished it, I was like, oh, I'm tired, like, because I played the last quiet mission, and that mission was a fucking drag. So I was like, I'm just gonna leave this, I don't want to finish, like, I don't want to play any more of this right now. I'll probably be able to, like, go through the last sprint tomorrow. The next morning I wake up, I do, like, two side ops, and then load up that mission, and then you walk downstairs, I'm like, man, how much more, I don't want to play this game anymore, how much more of it is left? You're like, you're in the last mission. It's like, what the fuck do you mean I'm in the last mission? Like, I thought that this would be the mission I would play that would then introduce, like, the stretch of, like, three missions that is, like, the end of the game that, like, you just have to play in sequence. Like, that's why I'd stopped, because I thought, like, the next point would be, like, well, the thrust of the conclusion of the game is going to take me through to the end once I start this next mission.
Nope.
Like, nope. It's just, you just play through the opening cinematic with, like, a couple of different things. Like, a couple of things different.
And because it's all flashback, I mean, think about this. the actual, like, present-day story you had been playing through of Venom Snake, we'll call him,
yeah,
doesn't even resolve. You just, in the playthrough, you leave him with the quiet mission, and then you never see him again.
Yeah.
Or you assume, like, maybe he's off doing side ops, but then you do the flashback, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, the structure of this game is monstrously bad.
Yeah, yeah, let's talk, like, let's do that. Let's start from the beginning with the plot, kind of, yeah, and, like, address the structure, because I do think that that's, like, one of the key spots where it just completely implodes, is how they try to tell the story.
And the thing is, it starts well.
Yes, the opening of the game, the first time you play it, when you don't, like, know everything that's happening, the first time you play through the opening, it's really well done.
I think both you and I said, the night the game came out, we played that, this is Kojima at his weird, cinematic, fetishistic best.
Yes.
It doesn't all make sense. It doesn't all add up. It's quirky, but it's quirky in the best way. It's big, it's bombastic, but it feels, you know, provocative, and, like, this is clearly a springboard for a big, great story.
Yeah, and it, like, sets up all these really interesting questions and stuff of just, you know, like starting with the way that, like, you know, you assume that you're playing as Big Boss, obviously, from the beginning. And then but you have that other character voiced by Kiefer Sutherland that's sort of helping you along. You have your Ahab and Ishmael thing. And so, and that's just, like, right off the bat, it's a really interesting question mark of, like, well, who is that guy? And, like, I think we both, like, had, like, thought up the possibility of, like, well, maybe, like, I'm not Big Boss and that's actual Big Boss. Like, I thought, like, I wasn't sure if the timeline of, like, maybe that's Solid Snake or maybe that's Solidus Snake, like, one of the clones. Like, maybe it's just a delusion, a hallucination. Like, there's a lot of different question marks there. And then you get Psycho Mantis popping in, and that's the way they handle Psycho Mantis in terms of, like, visually is really cool. Like, yeah, like the silhouette of the character and stuff, and the way it just appears and stuff happens. You have the Vulgan, the man on fire, pops, so you don't know he's Vulgan unless you had just played Metal Gear Solid 3 and was like, oh yeah, that's, like, Vulgan's bandolier and, like, his weird leotard, so it's Vulgan. And then you the fucking Revolver Ocelot on a horse, like, picks you up and rides away as flaming Vulgan on a flaming unicorn chases after you, and then Psycho Mantis causes a giant flaming whale to appear and, like, destroy a helicopter, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the opening of the game is fucking crazy, bombastic, and amazing. It's just, like, it's the perfect way to start off what you think is going to be a really cool story.
Yeah, and then you kind of settle into the rhythms of the game, where you meet Miller again. You have to get him out of Afghanistan. Yeah. And then he brings you back to Mother Base. He started this organization called the Diamond Dogs because everyone in this game fucking loves their David Bowie.
Yeah.
I approve.
And everyone is tired of saying Militaire sans frontier.
Yes, so...
Because that would what he could do to a good French accent like
Yes. Me. Diamond Dogs, which I don't know. I don't know if I can fully resolve that Big Boss would be into glam rock.
Yeah.
But whatever. Anyway, so they have their Diamond Dogs, and you're gonna, you know, you're trying to build up some money and some resources so you can go after Cypher because of what he's done to you. So first you need to just go play some missions. And that makes total sense at that point.
Yeah, like the very beginning where you're just like, you're just getting your feet, the game is introducing you to all these systems like Mother Base and opening up like your R&D team, your military team, your intel team, your support team, like all that stuff. It's opening that stuff as you're doing missions and sort of like, it feels like that's like an extended tutorial kind of thing,
yeah,
you know?
And like you're just meeting characters and you're seeing, like you see Psycho Mantis and Fire Vulgan again and you're kind of wondering, ooh, what's going to happen with all this?
Yes.
You get glimpses of Skullface and you just expect like, okay, for now, for maybe these first 5-10 missions, I'm just building up our resources, getting into things, but you know, because this is how games usually go, and TV shows and everything,
yes,
eventually it'll, you know, convalesce, come together,
yeah,
and you'll
story
have...
will kick into gear, like, you'll get some, like, character development, you'll get some plot going on,
yeah,
like, some things will start happening and some ideas will be presented to you.
And no, instead, for about 28 missions, you're doing exactly that. There is no major forward momentum in the story, there is no even overarching story, there's Miller is mad at Cypher, but that's about it.
Yeah, and then within the context of just this game and this story, like, what Cypher is so poorly defined that even if, like, I know from my Metal Gear, like, knowledge about, like, Zero, although Zero as an antagonist, as we talked about on the last podcast, is, like, so poorly fucking defined, that it's like, I know what Cypher is, and I know who Zero is, and I know that they're supposed to be an antagonistic force. I know that they're, like, they are the Templars, basically, from Assassin's Creed. I know these things, but the game doesn't make you feel any of it at any point because it's just... takes all that knowledge for granted. It's just like, well, we're not going to spend the time about making any of those elements matter with this story, which is something that you have to do. Like, I don't care what you are. If you are a franchise story, you cannot take for granted that people are going to just fucking give a shit about this, you know? Like, you don't watch the Avengers and just, like, you know, Joss Whedon just didn't assume that everybody loved all the characters, so just, like, didn't put any effort into putting any character development or, like, any interesting character moments at the beginning of the movie, you know?
Right.
Like, you have to set those things up within the context of the thing that it is. Like, you cannot just assume that everyone knows, understands, and cares about Big Boss because they've played Metal Gear Solid 3 and Peace Walker, you know? Like, you can't just take that character work for granted in this game. You have to do that work every single time. Because that is what defines what the story of this game is going to be and how it uses those characters.
I mean, let's put it this way. If you're playing this game and you really look back on it, I think you could question, does Cypher actually act upon anything in this story directly?
No.
And no, because it's mostly it's Miller's paranoia about Cypher, and you find out Skullface isn't actually connected to Cypher anymore.
Yeah, he just has his weird XOF troop.
So for as much as you spend talking about Cypher, it's very possible that Cypher has no idea of anything going on in this entire game, and is just completely disconnected from
it. Yeah, it feels completely unrelated, and it's the same thing, it's the exact same thing as, like, the end of Peace Walker, where, like, the phrase Cypher first kind of comes up at the end of Peace Walker, and even there, it feels like it comes completely the fuck out of nowhere. But that feels like that's just setting up Metal Gear Solid. What I assumed would be like, oh, Metal Gear Solid 5 is going to go, like, way deeper into the organization of Cypher and Zero and stuff like that, because that's what Metal Gear, like, the franchise needs at this point. If you want this story to coalesce, is you have to define Zero as an antagonist. You have to define what Cypher is. You have to make me understand and care about that. And yeah, like, it does not come up in, like, a narrative-intensive way, ever. It's always just at the end of a fucking mission, you have just extracted some dude, and fucking Miller's just like, so, this guy said that he was working for Cypher. Cypher's probably behind all this stuff. It's like, and then you just go into the next mission. It's like, every single mission says that. And it's like, you can't just tell me that Cypher is bad. Like, you can't just keep on saying over and over and over again, it's Cypher's fault, without, like, showing me anything, you know? It's the most drastic fucking example of tell and not showing that I've ever seen.
So, the game is split into two chapters, basically. There's chapter one, which is sort of the traditional video game thing of you go through missions 1 to 31, and then there's credits, and then you have chapter two, which is a mix of new unlockable bonus missions and old missions done with harder stuff, but that's where the real story comes in. So, in chapter one, though, like I said, you think you're going to be doing 5 to 10 missions of just kind of getting your feet. Instead, you do about 28. And then around mission 28 is when you get this stuff where there's the virus back at base. And you have to figure out that mystery and that ultimately. And then you have for, like, missions 28, 29, 30, and 31, for, like, four missions, you have a sustained story going on.
Yeah, where the missions do a Peace Walker thing where it ends with to be continued.
Yeah. So you have to rescue Code Talker, who is this weird Native American guy who's in Afghanistan for some reason.
He's in Africa. He's in Africa. He's in Africa, right.
Yeah. Equally weird.
Yeah.
But
he's a scientist who designed the vocal parasite.
Somehow. Anyway, so.
Or, like, he's like, modified it, I guess, because, like, the vocal parasite has been around since, like, dinosaur times or something.
So you learn about the vocal cord parasite, which leads you to learn about Skullface. You have to go try to stop Skullface, which leads to a confrontation with Skullface.
It leads to a long Jeep ride with Skullface as he sort of, like, really awkwardly lectures at you with weird pauses in between, like, the dialogue recordings, and Big Boss stares at him and says nothing the whole time, and you're just like, I just spent that entire fucking long-ass Jeep ride just putting my night vision goggles on and off constantly, because I got so fucking bored with it. And it's like, look, I don't love the long, like, meandering monologue cutscenes in Metal Gear, but if you're going to do the long monologues, it's way more interesting to put in a cutscene where you have, like, interesting, like, cinematic framing than to just have me sit there in a fucking Jeep staring at a fucking dope dude named Skullface putting on my night vision goggles and making the camera look all weird because I'm fucking bored out of my goddamn mind.
Question.
Yeah.
Would you prefer the approach they took in Metal Gear Solid 5, right, when he monologues and you can just control the camera like that and it's boring, Or if they did the thing where it cuts to sepia tone maps and shit, and he talks over that.
I mean, it's basically the exact same thing, but at least, like, I have, like, conditioned myself over over the course of this Metal Gear bullshit, that, like, whenever it fades to black and then comes up and it's a sepia tone map with some, like, really, like, pixelated pictures on it that someone narrates over, then I can just completely remove myself from the story because I know everything's going to be talked about as complete nonsense. But even those are actually, I think, like, visually more stimulating than sitting in the back of the Jeep. Because it's something where, since you have given me, like, I have the controller in my hand, I can move the camera around, I can just, like, magically make my night vision goggles appear on my face and make them go away, because that's how night vision goggles work. Like, I can do all that stuff, and it makes me, like, crave being able to do something more. Like, that minimum level of interaction is, like, makes me antsy, you know?
It's like those parts in video games where they have you walk around slowly while someone talks.
Yeah, like the Gears of War, like the finger to your ear, like, yeah. Anya. That stuff, yeah.
Right. So, yes, yeah, so you, and then in, like I said, episode 31, you fight Sahelanthropus, which I was telling you
it's off, the Sahelanthropus.
I was telling you this last week, because you hear the word Sahelanthropus said so many times in this game,
yeah,
particularly by Huey, but by everyone at a certain point. You hear it said so many times, and I would laugh every time they said it, and I couldn't figure out why at first, other than that it's a silly scientific word.
Yeah.
But then I figured out, there is a Louis C.K. bit, and it's maybe my favorite Louis C.K. bit. I think it's from his Beacon Theater album, and he's talking about this kid he hates in his daughter's class,
yeah,
and he doesn't want to give the kid's real name, for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
So he calls him Jazandapus. And every time they would say Sahelanthropus, I would think of Jazandapus.
Which, like, you might as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's equally gibberish.
Yeah. Because I find it weird that in this game, like, it's got that weird, like, kind of Star Wars prequel effect of that the thing's supposed to take place, like, in the past, but all the technology seems like it's way more advanced. Where right. It's like, if this is supposed to, this takes place in the year 1984. Like, that is when the game is set. You have, like, a Walkman, you know? And yet, the metal, like, Sahelanthropus, that, like, is 100 times way more advanced looking than any of the Metal Gears, you know? Like, right. Metal Gear Ray looks like it's, like the prototype for Sahelanthropus, which is, like, fucking unfolds, like, it's fucking, like, Voltron or something, you know? Right. Like, it's this big bipedal thing with, like, a fucking, like, laser whip and a giant, like... Like, all the Metal Gears have had big, like, penis guns on them. Like, where their penis should be, there's either a laser or a flamethrower, always. This one takes that to a ludicrous degree, because it's a big bipedal, like, it looks like a human, basically, but a robot with a weird-looking head, and it just has a giant fucking flamethrower dick. It's the most, like, absurd that has ever gotten, where it doesn't feel like that's just, like, for the boss fight. That just feels that, like... Hideo Kojima really likes robot dicks, and he wants them on all of his robots.
Yes. So, anyway, you beat Sahelanthropus in one of the worst boss fights I've ever played in a video game.
Yeah.
And...
So, fuck it. All of, like, those boss fights are so tedious. The quiet one is the only one that I like. Like, but all, like, the ones against the, the non-quiet, the skull people, like, yeah. All those fights and stuff, those fucking suck, because they take so long.
They do. And that Sahelanthropus one, just, I thought I was going to give up on the game because I could not get through that fucking fight.
It's just something where it's like you're constantly having to drop more ammo for your fucking rocket launcher, and it takes, like, literally 3 minutes for the ammo to drop. In Peace Walker, you had to do that, but in Peace Walker, it took, like, 10 seconds for your ammo to drop. It didn't take a fucking hour, you know?
Yeah, it's stupid, and I don't know why they wouldn't just give you infinite ammo for that fight.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. Like, that was why I was, like, just yelling at my TV when I was doing the quiet mission where you just have to fight 100 tanks. It's like, just give me infinite ammo. This would be totally fine if I did not have to stop every fucking 10 seconds, because I can just blow all my rocket ammo, like, immediately and blow up 2 tanks, and I just have to wait forever to get some fucking ammo. It's awful.
It is. And so, anyway, you beat Sahelanthropus. You have a final little set of cutscenes where you kill Skullface, and Huey does some bad acting and stuff.
What a lust for revenge! Who? Fucking Skullface. And,
like, that is a great line in a terrible way, but that is great.
It's just such a weird scene when he gets stepped on.
It's like they took 3 lines, put them in a blender, and played half of each of them.
What a lust for revenge.
So, that's the end of that, and already at that point in the game, my experience was I had checked out so fucking hard, because by the time you... So what I was trying to say with this whole spiel is that by the time you get to those last couple missions of Chapter 1, I think you're already checked out, because you've gone probably 30-40 hours of no story happening, no character development happening, a couple more hints of those cool visuals you got early on, but with an increasing sense that it was never going to add up to anything.
Yeah.
And then you get to those last couple cutscenes, like where you're blowing off Skullface's arm and stuff like that, and you're like, man, this would be such a good ending to a different game.
Yeah, like if they had built Skullface up at all as a villain, just at all, if they had done fucking anything with him, this would have been, like, slightly satisfying. But like, you see him maybe three times, maybe not even that much, over the course of the game. And every time, except for the last time, is a really fleeting appearance where you kind of see him a little bit. He says, like, two lines, and then he fucks off. And you're like, fucking develop him as a villain. Like, do something. Show me something with Skullface. Have him say a couple of more lines.
Right.
Like, periodically over the course of the game. Have me encounter him, like, one time before, you know? Like, have a fucking boss fight against him or something where he escapes alive. Or just do something with him as a villain so that I actually feel, like, some sort of satisfaction from taking him out, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, they're trying to do the James Bond villain thing where the formula in, like, a James Bond movie is the big bad villain is, like, kind of in the background for a good chunk of the movie and Bond is trying to go after him and you just keep getting glimpses of him.
Yeah.
But always in a Bond movie, by the second act or earlier, he comes face-to-face with him, and then they actually have actual scenes together. In the best Bond movies, they have, you know, extended faces off, like in Skyfall and Casino Royale with those villains.
Yeah.
And, you know, you really get to know them, or in there's other ones I could talk about. But anyway, like, that's how you do it. And in this, like, they got it so wrong. It would be like if in a James Bond movie, he didn't meet the villain until the last action scene.
Yeah.
And then was really angry at him for some reason.
I mean, it would be like in Metal Gear Solid 3, like, even if I don't feel like they did quite enough with the Naked Snake and boss relationship in that game, it's like, at least, like, boss does show up. Like, you know, at least, like, you are constantly reminded of her presence, and she and fucking Snake fight, like, four times over the course of that game, you know? So that way, when you do get to the end, like, it's not completely limp. Like, that last boss fight against her feels like momentous and satisfying because the game has built that up. Like, it could have built it up more in a more, like, interesting thematic way. Like, it could have done better, but it did, like, more than the bare minimum. This game doesn't even do the bare minimum of setting up that fight, you know?
Right. And then when you get to chapter 2, all of the stuff about Skullface's motivations, his history after his death, all of that is done with Troy Baker talking to you on a cassette.
Yeah.
All of it. Every bit of character development they would do with Skullface, and I'm not saying it's good character development, but everything they would have done is just recorded on a couple of measly cassettes.
Yeah, they basically just give you a handful of audio logs to play, should you choose, after you've already defeated the antagonist, in order to be to build up the antagonist after you've already defeated him.
Yeah.
And then even saying that you've defeated him is also kind of a misnomer, because he kind of just goes out in the most pathetic way possible, where you have he has that long spiel at you in the Jeep. And then he says, "What a lust for revenge, who?" And then the fucking philanthropist hits a beam that knocks him down, and then you walk up and you shoot him a bunch. Like, he does nothing. Like, he's completely, like, he might as well not even be in the game. Like, you know, because your boss fight is against the philanthropist. You never have, like, a real encounter with him. Like, you don't even get to have, like, a weird anime-style philosophical face-off or something, because Big Boss doesn't ever say anything. So you just take his, like, huge spiel about, like, language and nonsense, and you're just staring at him with your night vision goggles on.
Yep. Not great.
Yeah.
Not great. And it's like, in that chapter one, even some of the most important stuff, I feel like, just happens, again, on the periphery. Like, rescuing Huey is a side hop.
Yeah.
Things like that, where it's just, it feels like the actual, like, you can count on one hand, literally, the number of narratively important episodes in the first chapter of this game. And when I say first chapter, if you haven't played it, that's the vast majority of the game. Like, the chapter thing
that's
is
all
misleading.
Of the unique content in terms of, like, gameplay is all in first chapter. Everything in chapter two is a rehash.
Yes. Yeah. Either of location or of literal missions.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
And then also, like, this is, like, the, like, other weird tragic thing is that, for me, like, for all the entire game, I was just craving, like, give me a narrative. Like, give me some characters. Fucking set up a conflict. Do something with the story in this game. I was constantly craving that. But the most tragic thing is that every single time you would have a mission that would do some of that, that like introduce Huey, and you have to go for, like, rescue Huey and stuff like that, there's, like, the sense of, like, oh, we're going to be introducing a new character into this story. Something's going to have to happen. Unilaterally, all those fucking missions, all the story important missions, are all the worst missions in the game. Because all of them take away a lot of your freedom. Like, they'll either be the boss fights, which are awful, or, like, with that Huey one, where the entire, like, most of the missions in the game, you can accomplish your objectives in a huge variety of ways. And the Huey one, like, there's only one fucking way to get into his lab, you know? Like, there's no variety into tackling the mission. There's no interesting way to go about this. Like, and all the story missions are like that. They either have a shitty boss fight, other than, again, the quiet one I think is fine. Or it, like, the gameplay, like, really restricts itself to accommodate the, you know, like the mission where you go get Eli, it's all, like, child soldiers and stuff, which, you know, like, obviously you can't take out the child soldiers and kill them. Like, I don't want that to happen. But because of that, like, it just feels like that mission just felt so light and, like, there's no gameplay because I just kind of, like, snuck in because I also couldn't Fulton them because I didn't have that upgrade because I don't think you can even get that upgrade at that point where you can Fulton child soldiers.
You can't get that until you get the retrieve the child soldier missions in Chapter 2. Yeah.
So, yeah. So then you can't Fulton them. You can't do anything, like, in that. You can't interrogate them. It's, so it's like whenever there's a story mission, it just, like, restricts all the gameplay mechanics and it's fucking awful.
The only one, like, that I enjoyed was Mission 30, which is called Skullface, where you're going into his base. I kind of like that one, because it is, like, the uber infiltration mission. That's true, I mean, I can see where you're going with...
Yeah, I wasn't thinking about that one, because all those last missions kind of bleed together into one long one to me.
Yeah.
And that one, I just got to a point where I was like, I just really want to get to Skullface, so I just hopped in, like, because they have a bunch of tanks in that base, I just hopped in a tank and killed everything.
Yeah, no, I went crazy in that one. I tried infiltrating for a while, then I was like, I hate this game, so...
Because that one also, unless, like, maybe I just didn't see it, but I feel like that mission was the one where, like, there's only one way to get in. Like, there's a big front door.
Yeah.
Maybe I didn't find another way around, maybe there was another way, but it just seemed like... You have to go through this big door. That's, like, the only way into this complex.
You do. The thing is, I think in, like, a good Metal Gear game, there's often a mix of kind of open environments and then ones maybe where that are more direct. Like, you have a lot of ways you can get to that door, but you do. That is your goal, is to get there.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that if the game overall had a greater sense of variety and you know, built to that better.
Sure, yeah.
There's a lot of decisions like that I think you could go with, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, so... And then Chapter 2...
Oh, good man, Chapter 2.
Fuckity God. Have you ever played a stretch of a video game as disjointed, frustrating, confusing, and clearly unfinished as Chapter 2 of Metal Gear Solid 5?
It is like the ending of Knights of the Old Republic 2, which is a game that, like, literally did not get finished, and, like, the ending of that game is... And by ending, I mean, like, probably, like, the last hour, so it's way less content. But the ending of Knights of the Old Republic 2 is so unfinished, there are literally, like, cutscenes where characters die, and then the next cutscene, that character's still alive. Like, that happens. That's how unfinished that is. But this is... But that's fine, because most of the game up to that point is really amazing. This is just, like, such an unbelievably tedious fucking crawl to get to the end of this game, once you get to Chapter 2. And it's so tragic because it has a similar kind of thing to Peace Walker, where Peace Walker has, like, it has 5 chapters. And the first 4 chapters are all the main story dealing with Peace Walker and the AI machines and stuff like that. And then once you beat that, you get Chapter 5, which is Outer Heaven, which is sort of like the endgame content. And that's stuff where you have to just do some extra ops and you unlock a couple of extra story missions to get the true ending. Which is similar to what this is, only in Peace Walker, that's like maybe 2, maybe at most 3 hours if you, like, fuck around a lot. And then it's done and you get to the end and it's not the most satisfying conclusion in the world. But, like, you can say that it concluded the story and, like, set up some stuff for a new game and sort of finished Big Boss's arc for that one. In this, it's like... Chapter 2, I don't know, like, didn't count the hours. It felt like it was at least as long for me as Chapter 1, in terms of, like, just the amount of time I had to play. But again, with no unique content. Like, most of the content they ask you to do is either side ops, of which if you have been doing side ops periodically over the course of the game up to that point, you have done all the different kinds of side ops, and you have done all the different kinds of side ops probably at least 4 times. And almost all the side ops are basically just, like, a prisoner extraction, highly skilled soldier extraction, like, unlucky dog where you have to get one of your captured mother base soldiers. Like, 5 of the fucking side ops types are all what all the missions are in the main missions, which is infiltrate a base and Fulton the dude. That's, like, every fucking mission in this game kind of boils down to that, you know? And so you either have to do all the side ops, or you have to replay one of the main missions with, like, some modifiers on it that just strip out mechanics, which isn't interesting to me. Like, I'd rather you make the game difficult without removing my ability to do things. Because it feels like if you're just stripping away, like, reflex mode and all that stuff, you're just making the game cheap, you know?
Like, in Ground Zeroes, there's a normal and hard mode.
Yeah.
And you can just play on hard mode, and you can still use reflex mode and the tools you have, and it's fun. It's a genuine challenge that feels fair. I tried a bunch of those, you know, harder modified missions in Phantom Pain, and they're just frustrating. There's nothing fun about it.
Yeah, it just, like, because the one thing that the game has that's really well done is it has, like, all this choice, stripping out all that choice. It's just like, you're just removing the point of, like, why I want to play this game. And then the few unique story missions that do exist in Chapter 2, all of them take place in areas that you've already been, except for the mission where you kill your own zombie soldiers, but that's not even, like, there's no real gameplay there. Like, you shoot a bunch of dudes in the head who are writhing on the ground because they're zombies. And that's that whole mission. So it's like, and all the main missions that, like, the new main missions in Chapter 2 also just feel completely just sort of like hashed together, you know. Like, there's that one that I thought was the most lazy of them all, which is where you have to, like, you go back to the mansion that Kotaku was at, and you have to, like, get those big pieces of cargo that he had, that unless you want to, like, infiltrate the mansion to get all the optional objectives, that entire mission is capture one dude, interrogate him, then go Fulton two cargo boxes. And that's the whole fucking mission. It's like, you can complete that mission in fucking 3 minutes if you just want to finish it. It's fucking pathetic. It's so sad that, like, they considered that to be not a side-op. Like, that is the amount of content I would expect from a side-op, not, like, one of the fucking six unique missions you get in Chapter 2.
Right. Right. And then you get to those last couple missions, and they just start going, just throwing narrative nets out at willy-nilly. They go nowhere. You get, like, the stuff with Eli where you have to go rescue all the child soldiers, and then Eli steals Solilanthropus, which this is all building to a mission that was literally unfinished and not in the game.
Yeah, cut from the game.
So, totally the KOTOR 2 kind of thing.
Which was one of the things of why I did not understand I was at the end of the game, is because there was this huge fucking subplot about how Little Liquid Snake, the villain from Metal Gear Solid 1, that was, like, waiting for them to do something with this character because that would be really fucking cool to see this character actually, like, do something. He steals Solilanthropus and fucking runs away, and you never see him again. That is, again, this content is cut from the game, but if you're just looking at the game as it is, which is what you have to do in our position, that subplot is just left. And it's not picked up. It's obviously, like, that's not a plot point that is somehow, it doesn't set up what happens in another Metal Gear game or anything. That's just, nope, that's just gone. That's, fucking ignore that. We just wasted one of the few interesting characters that I thought they had in the game. It was like that I actually, but that they did nothing with. Like, I wanted to see more Eli. The little bit of Eli that was in the game I thought seemed interesting, but they never did anything with it.
Right. And, like, down to the point where there's this debate over whether or not he's Liquid Snake. We know he is, but the characters are wondering it.
Yeah.
And that's never resolved until you get to the end credit scroll, and in the timeline, you're told he's Liquid.
Yeah.
That's how lazy that is at the end. So all of that, and, like, the stuff with Psycho Mantis, all of that is just in cassette tapes. He plays no actual, you know, agency-based role in the story.
Yeah.
He does nothing. Nothing is confirmed about him. You assume he's Psycho Mantis, but how he gets from that point to the character who can read your controller port in Metal Gear Solid 1?
Yeah.
No idea.
Yeah, like, how he, like hooks up with Liquid and, like, Big Boss with Foxhound and all that stuff. You would think that that would be this whole game. You'd think that that would be this game is, like, setting up all that stuff that, like, you hear about in, like, flashbacks and in character stories in the other Metal Gear games about this really rich, interesting point in the Metal Gear lore. You would think that that would be, this is finally your opportunity to actually tell some of those stories and dig into some of those characters and stuff and dig into that history. Nope. Fuck that. Psycho Mantis. Nope. We're not going to actually do anything with you. It, like, everything they do with him, even if you listen to the cassette tapes, I feel like is really confusing and makes no real sense about, like, how he just responds to people's lusts for revenge, which somehow Eli's is, like, the strongest, even though he's, like, 10 years old and nothing has really happened to him.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And they're calling him the third boy, which at first I'm like, does that mean he's Solidus Snake? That makes no sense, but fuck it, they could do that. They've done dumber twists.
Yeah, that's...
But yeah, so you do that, and then you do this mission with Quiet, which, as you said, is really awful, but
I think the story stuff they do with, of all the characters, Quiet is the, this is so sad to say, Quiet is the best character in this game. She is the best, most developed character in this game. And that's not saying that she's well developed. I mean, she's, in a certain sense, she's well developed. I mean, she's fucking sure of that. But, like, she, as a character, like, she, at least, like, when she leaves and, like, her arc is finished, I think in a story, like a literal plot sense, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me because it has to do with the vocal cord parasites, which I still don't really understand how those things are supposed to work, even though I listened to all the cassette tapes that I had unlocked, and they spent a lot of time trying to explain how the vocal cord parasites work. But then they introduced that, like, zombie mission that just feels like it completely changes how they're supposed to work all of a sudden. And so, and then that ties in directly why Quiet decides to leave. So I'm just like, I don't understand why you're leaving. I know you're infected with the English strain. You said, like, a sentence in English at the end of the episode, and that's supposed to be a huge moment. And it kind of is, it's really well presented when she does decide to speak to save Big Boss's life. But it's like, I don't know why that means you have to leave. Like, all the mechanics of that, like, literally make no sense. But it's a very tastefully done scene, like, because she has this whole monologue that I think is pretty well written about why she, like, says nothing or whatever. And she's standing, you can see it in the opening teaser for chapter 2 or whatever, where she's standing on the sand dune at this night in the background, and, like, sand blows in front of her, and then she's disappeared. Like, it's a really well done moment, and then it, like, cuts to black, plays her, like, theme song. It's like, yeah, okay. That felt like this character had an arc that completed. You know, this was, I don't think it was a good story. I don't think it was anywhere near as developed as it needed to be. I think the incredibly misogynistic aspects of how her character is presented detract from it every single step of the way. But I can confidently say that Quiet had a character arc that began and ended in this game. I can fucking say that. You cannot say that about literally any other character in this game, except for maybe Huey. Maybe Huey. And that's like, only if you, like, really care about and, under, like, remember what his, like, future is as presented in Metal Gear Solid 2, you know? Yeah. That's the only way that you can say that Huey had a complete character arc.
And even then, his character arc is,
it's annoying and stupid.
It's annoying and stupid. It's, this traitorous piece of shit betrayed us. Should we kick him out? No, let's see if he can do better. Well, he betrayed us again 5 minutes later. Should we kick him out now? Yeah. No, yeah.
The number of times that you, like, have to go into room 101 and they are torturing Huey, it's just like, guys, like, this fucking piece of shit doesn't do anything for us. Like, that's another part of the game where they have that whole battle gear thing. That fucking goes
nowhere. Yeah, what's that for?
I don't, like, they, like, eventually he finished it, and I get the sense that you were supposed to be able to use it in combat deployment. I never figured out if that was something you actually did.
I'm guessing it's something deleted from the game.
Yeah, it felt like it was something deleted from the game. Because, like, the game doesn't, like, point you out any way to make use of it.
Because in Peace Walker, it's pretty cool. You can build your own Metal Gear.
Yeah, and when you do build your own Metal Gear, they make it very clear what you can do with it.
Right. And I feel like that was probably a system meant to be implemented in this game that never was.
Yeah, because it's just like, that fucking completely goes nowhere. And since that goes nowhere, it just leaves you not understanding why Huey's supposed to be on the base. Because that's what he's supposed to be doing, but that doesn't do anything. So it's just like, why the fuck is this traitorous piece of shit here? And it feels like the game is constantly, like, or at least Huey is constantly defending himself in some way.
Yeah.
And it's just like, and I lost sense of if the game was trying to make me feel that it was ambiguous, or if it was just Huey insisting it, that I was like, no, like, there's no question. Like, we literally have a 10-minute recording of you strangling, like, not strangling, but, like, you locking your kind of half-wife Dr. Strangelove, one of the few interesting, like, and, like, well-developed and not sexualized female characters in all of Metal Gear. You, like, lock her in the AI pod, and she fucking suffocates to death in there. There is no question. Like, you are a murderous piece of shit. You murdered the mother of your child. You murdered the mother of Otacon, like, one of the more beloved characters in the franchise. Like, there is no question. It's not ambiguous. Like, you're, like, the, we already knew that you were a piece of shit. You are, like, the biggest piece of shit ever, though. Like, it's,
and, like,
so over the top with it.
And I would say, I don't think he has an arc, though, because you get to the end and you kick him off the base, but he just does, he toes the same line from start to finish,
true,
which
yeah.
is that I'm innocent, trying to shed light on Big Boss being bad, except he's not in the circumstances he's criticizing him for. Like, you know, when Huey is criticizing you for killing your soldiers in that one mission where there's zombies.
All of your soldiers infected with a terminal illness that will cause them to become viral and turn into zombies and, like, infect the rest of the base. Like, oh no, I killed these people that were already dead and being manipulated by a fucking parasite.
Right.
Oh no.
Yeah, it would be like if in The Last of Us, Ellie went around being like, Joel, how can you kill those zombies?
Yeah, like, how could you kill this dude whose head was exploded into fungus, which is basically
right.
where they're fucking at, you know?
Right. So he does that, and then he's mad at Big Boss for kicking him off the base, so I don't think he has it. He has no change or development.
That's
and
true,
your
yeah.
view of him really doesn't either, because it just, when Big Boss chooses not to kill him at the end, it just makes him look weak.
Yeah, exactly. There was something where usually I would, like, stand by the, like, protagonist is merciful to, like, this piece of shit character. Normally I'm like, yeah, okay. Like, right. That feels like the right thing to do most of the time. But in this, it's like, no way, dude. Like especially with, like, the little bit they do with Big Boss in this game, I don't get the sense that, like, your fake Big Boss is, like, a nice, merciful dude. Like he's not going to kill someone with no reason. But you've got a hell of a lot of reason for killing fucking Huey. Like, he is worse than Skullface in a lot of ways. Like, he is a huge fucking monstrous piece of shit.
And if you let him out in the world again, he could go build more Metal Gears and shit. He could destroy the world, which he almost does, and we know that from our hindsight. But even in the moment, Big Boss should know that. You're letting this guy with all this skill to build weapons of mass destruction, and who will do it because he's selfish and evil.
Yeah, he just has this, for somehow, between Peace Walker and this game, became a complete fucking psychopath. Like, I don't understand where that fucking change came from.
Yeah. But as he's presented in this game, it is literal stupidity to let him live. So none of that makes any sense, and there's no emotional impact to it. And I do think the game wants you to think it's ambiguous, like you were wondering. But I think the amount of time you have to watch Huey, you know, protesting, and he's really the only voice there because Big Boss never speaks up for himself. Yeah. And, you know, Miller is just on the other side being angry all the time, so there's no nuance.
He's just mumbling cipher under his breath through the game.
There's no real nuance to any of this. So it's just gibberish. Yeah. It's all gibberish. Because
there is, I think, one of the parts that, like, made me wonder if it was supposed to be ambiguous is, like, when you start Chapter 2, they do that whole weird thing where Miller has that big speech about, like, look to your, like, brother to your left and to your right, like, one of you is a traitor thing, and then you load up, and there's, like, a posters all over Mother Base saying, like, Big Brother or Big Boss is watching you. It's just like, you know, the game said 1984, ha, very funny. But it's like, like, I thought, like, oh, that's going to, like, that seems like that will be interesting. Because, like, it was something where I was, like, optimistic about Chapter 2 when I got into it. Because it was, like, I think the teaser at the beginning of Chapter 2 that, like, it sort of, like, gives you a quick glimpse of the sort of the cutscenes that will play. Like, it's just like, oh, some of that stuff looks like that's going to be fucking cool. Like, the cutscene that plays after you kill your zombie soldiers with, like, the big funeral, that's a cool-looking cutscene. You don't realize that there's no real, like, narrative thrust behind it, so it's completely meaningless. But so it's like, I was like, yeah, Chapter 2 is going to have cool stuff, and then you load up, and it's like those big bosses watching you posters, like, that's cool, like, this is, feels like it's going for something now. But they don't ever do anything with it, except for the Huey's accusations feel like they kind of tie into that, but they don't develop it at all past that opening cutscene. Like, it never comes up. There's never a sense that, like, Mother Base is tearing itself apart looking for the Cypher spy. Like, they never even find the fucking Cypher spy.
No.
Do they? No. Like, because Huey isn't really, I don't think. He's just a piece of shit. I don't think he's working with Cypher yet. It's just like, yeah, I don't, like, it's there are so many things in Chapter 2 that are set up that are not paid off, or so many things that are paid off that were never set up to begin with. Which is what gives a sense of that it's, like, completely unfinished.
So.
Yes.
You go through the Huey thing, you go through killing your soldiers, you go through losing Quiet.
Yeah.
And then
you go through, like, Eli just, like,
running away.
You're running off into, like, a better hypothetical game.
Right. And then the game's over.
Yeah.
Because you have this last mission. You have one little cutscene that recontextualizes things set 9 years ago. And then you literally just replay the prologue to the game, beat for beat, word for word, with almost no changes, down to the point that you get all the tutorial pops again.
Yes. Yeah, and the only changes are in the very beginning, like, the parts of the opening section where you're not actually playing, where, like, the doctor is showing you stuff, and there's a couple of little things. That it's also, like, it feels like you figure it out immediately, because the opening of it is they show that scene that's from, I think it's, like, you see at the end of Ground Zeroes, where, like, they're in the hospital room, and Miller's like, don't you die on me, and it's like, what's about him? Oh, and then, like, they look at you into the camera, and it's like, he's got shrapnel in his head. That's, like, all that needed to be. That is, like, literally the entirety of it. But then you, like, wake up in the hospital room and you have the whole opening cinematic, which takes, like, fucking 10 minutes, and the doctor shows you, like, a couple of things. It's like, look, like, Big Bosses, you're not actually Big Boss. We're going to make you into fake Big Bosses. Like, I fucking figured out all that shit already, dude. Like, you already tipped your hand. Like, this is going way overboard. And then you have to play through the, like, when I fucking finished that mission, it had, like, the timer on it, so it took 80 minutes to get through that, and I skipped a lot of the cutscenes. Like, that is a long, fucking tedious bit of gameplay. It's fine the first time you play through it, because you don't, like, you know, it's teaching you the controls, which if you haven't played Ground Zeroes, you wouldn't know, so it's like, fair enough. I'm fine with that. And it, like, all they're setting up all these things that you don't know yet, that the Psychomanta stuff goes nowhere. You don't know yet that the Volgan thing is a huge wet fart that they just kind of, like, say in a cassette tape, and it's, like, not an interesting payoff. It doesn't really, like, have the mechanics of how Volgan comes back to the dead as Man of Fire are not, like, interesting or, like, particularly well spelled out. Like, you don't know that all that stuff pays off as nothing yet the first time you play through it, so that's fine. The second time you play through it, you're just constantly reminded about how shitty the story is and how desperately that I just want to move forward. It was, like, constantly, like, I was waiting for other Kiefer, like, actual big boss, other Kiefer Sutherland, to, like, get to the spot that would trigger the next cutscene. I would be, like, running in place, like, in a circle, just waiting, like, let's get moving. Like, I can't skip these things. And I was so glad that you came down and were watching me play it, because you let me know, oh, by the way, you can just skip all the cutscenes except for once you get to the very end, because they don't change anything. Because I would have just watched them all waiting for the, like, the one where, like, you start playing as actual big boss or something, like, thinking naively that at some point they would have done something interesting with that scene.
Right.
No, it is baffling. Like, if I was even looking up when I was playing that and just watching cutscenes on my phone, like, did I do something wrong? Like, did I trigger it wrong? Like, I'm not actually playing the real mission
right,
here?
Yeah,
or something that, like that? Yeah. Because it's identical. It's identical, except for those little things at the beginning, and you go through the whole damn thing. It is the laziest, most just contempt for the player way to reveal a piece of narrative information I have ever seen.
It was like I told you when I was playing it, that it would be like if in Unusual Suspects, once you get to the end of the movie,
right?
If, like, spoilers for Unusual Suspects, fuck you if you haven't seen it, Kevin Spacey's actually the villain, and they show you in the actual Unusual Suspects, they just show you a couple of quick scenes with Kevin Spacey in there instead of, like, the vague outline of Kaiser Soze. It's like, oh, it makes sense. Like, that sort of explains everything you need to know about how, like, those moments actually played out now. They don't make you watch the entire fucking movie over again from the beginning.
Right.
Although, even if they did that, it would kind of be interesting because the twist in with Kaiser Soze is so comprehensively, like, recontextualizing Unusual Suspects. It would actually be kind of interesting if they did that. It wouldn't fucking... MGS5, nope. Like, you have to do that whole cutscene, or that whole, like, tutorial fucking sequence over again with no change. And the fucking topper of it all is that the twist that they do, not only is it just stupid and, like, not interesting, it means nothing for the game. Like, it says fucking nothing to me at all that this is not actual Big Boss. Like, I don't care, because they've never really fully developed Big Boss. They did some stuff in 3, they did a little more stuff in Peace Walker, but Big Boss as a character, I feel like, has never been actually done in Metal Gear Solid. Like, especially the stuff of that you thought this game was going to be, that sets up him being the villain for Metal Gear 1 and 2. They have never done that work, and they just keep on expecting people to take that, like, on faith that Big Boss is a character without ever making him a character. And this twist, just, like, it's the most laughable thing, because they barely do anything with fake Big Boss in this game. But then on top of that, that just means that Big Boss isn't in the game. Like, the actual character you want to see and the actual, like, character development you want to have happen doesn't happen at all. Like, they just, like, pull the rug out from under you, and it's like, nope, we have been kind of, like fucking limply developing this non-character that isn't even a character from the franchise. Like, he's a character that has no future, who has no history, that has nothing. Like, it's just completely empty and meaningless. And it doesn't recontextualize the rest of the story, because the rest of the story has nothing to do with Big Boss. Like, it doesn't matter that it's fake Big Boss fighting Skullface instead of actual Big Boss. Like, that doesn't make me look at those moments like I'm not going to replay Metal Gear Solid 5 and be like, oh, this is so crazy. So he's not Big Boss the whole time. Like, all of it makes sense now. It doesn't do any of that. It's just like, it's like, you might as well not have the twist in the story. It would make as much, if not even more sense, you know?
Well, it would make way more sense.
Yeah.
Because they give no explanation for how fake Big Boss gets his memories, gets his personality,
yeah,
all of that shit, how he becomes the greatest soldier who ever lived.
Yeah, how this dude who was the medic on the helicopter at the end of Ground Zeroes, how he somehow is just as good, if not way better than actual Big Boss, is a huge mystery to me.
Yes, so, and I really do feel like, I agree with everything you're saying, but it also does feel like it's just in such contempt of the player,
yeah,
because even if there's not a story being told or a good story being told, you do take it on faith that the character you're playing, especially in a sequel to a long-running franchise, is the character you know and have some level of affection for. I don't know if I'd go as far as love, but whatever. Some people do. But no, so that means even if you were moved, I don't know why, but even if you were moved by the scene where you have to kill your zombie crewmates, that doesn't matter because that's not the character. This is just some random dude who has turned into Big Boss.
Yeah.
And even more than that, it means that the actual story that you would like to see happening is going off on in the background. Big Boss is off doing something. You never find out what.
Yeah.
I was like, he's off in the real game.
Yeah, exactly. That was the sense that I got.
I'm playing the Phantom game. He's playing the real game, and I bet there's a story going on over there.
Yeah, like there is something. Something is happening somewhere in the universe of Metal Gear that I would like to see. Unfortunately, you're never going to see it because this is the last one.
Yeah.
This is like the biggest fucking middle finger. It's like the last game you make in this long-running franchise that takes place in the most interesting period in the history of the game, the period that they most need to show to actually make the stories of the rest of the games feel cohesive in some way. It's like you're finally fucking telling it, but then nope. Not only do you like tell that story poorly, or like as you, like I assume you're just telling it poorly at first, then you just say like, no, we're not even telling it in the first place. We're just saying nothing. We're just fucking shouting into the wind, and it's just like nothing. It's just nothing. It's not a story. It's not a fucking story.
No. Because it has no defined, it has a beginning, but it has no defined middle or end.
Yeah.
Because there is literally no climax or conclusion to the game.
Yeah, there's no sense of any sort of conflict that occurs, really. Like, Skullface is supposed to be an antagonist, but he's so in the background, and like, what you are doing, what he is doing, feels so like, just parallel. Like, you don't feel like you are like clashing at all with anything. Like, there's no legitimate antagonistic force because they're like just offloading all of that onto this like sort of like phantasmic fucking cipher entity that doesn't exist in the story. So it's like there just feels like there is no plot.
Yeah, and in terms of the ending, quote unquote, the way they present it by all being a hospital flashback is that you never see the player character Venom Snake find out that he's a double.
Yeah.
You never see Miller learn that he has been duped by his best friend.
Yeah.
You never see Ocelot have to tell these people that he was working for the real Big Boss and thus find out what Ocelot was up to. You never see these people have to rectify with all of that, and you don't know, frankly, if they ever do. I mean, there's the suggestions of that in the cutscenes and the end credit, you know, dialogue between Ocelot and Miller, which is just spectacularly awful. But whatever, that doesn't count.
Yeah.
So none of that actually happens. It's just the game, you play for a while, and then your story just ends, and you have a flashback that recontextualizes things, and that's it.
Yeah.
Goodbye. That's the end of this 30-year franchise.
It's like, and then let's back up a bit, because you like reminded me, we haven't talked about Revolver Ocelot at all, which is very easy to do when you're talking about this game.
Even though he's got more lines than anyone.
Yeah, that's true. He is nothing. Like, there is, it is astounding that you take this dude, he is the one character that has been in all the main Metal Gear games except for Peace Walker, which is actually the best Metal Gear game, but he's in all of them except for the best one, and somehow, he does nothing in this fucking game. Like, the dude who is the, like, big ultimate, like, the enemy in terms of, like, how the game presents it in Metal Gear Solid 4, like, obviously the Patriots are the actual, like, if you're, like, a logical human being, they're the actual antagonistic force. It's like, Revolver Ocelot is, like, the dude that the, like, modern-day setting Metal Gear games, like, built up as, like, the big villain, you know? And it's like, you get him in this game, you're like, he might as well not be here. Like, I have no fucking clue why he's in this game. I spent, like, fucking 60, 70 fucking hours. I have no idea how much of my time I fucking wasted on this piece of shit. He does nothing! It's amazing! The only things he does that's, like, vaguely connected to the main plot is he torches people, like, 4 or 5 times. And that's it. And it's, like, it gives no insight into his character. Like, I don't know why he's, I mean, I guess the ending kind of tells you why he's there. Not really, though. Like, I don't know how he got hooked up with Big Boss again. I don't know who he's working for. I don't know what his objectives are. I don't know what his motivations are. I don't know what the fuck he is doing in this game. But he is always there. Like, he's always there in the background. He's always, like, he says stuff to you all the time on, like, the cassette tapes and shit. But he is not a character. And it's astounding because even if I thought, like, his presence in Metal Gear Solid 3 was really weird, like, he was definitely a character. And I liked seeing him. Like, it was goofy and, like, kind of out of place. But I was always, kind of had a smile on my face when Devolver Ocelot showed up and he was hitting bees with his spinning revolvers, or like he was doing his weird like pointing thing at Big Boss. Like, there was a relationship there. There was a character there. He had a character arc, you know? It's like, and he's a really interesting presence in Metal Gear Solid 1. Like, I like Revolver Ocelot as a character, but like, this game just made me feel like I don't even know who he is anymore. Like, I don't understand who he is as a character. I don't understand what his role in the franchise is anymore. It's just like, it killed that character for me. It's like, he's just nothing. Like, I can't even like think of him anymore.
Let me put it this way. The actual writing on Ocelot is so unlike the character we've come to know, either as his young incarnation or his old. He's so much more mellow and helpful and just completely 100% different.
Yeah.
Total 180 of a character transition. That if anyone other than Troy Baker were doing the voice and trying to put some of that spin on it, I don't think you would even know it's Ocelot.
Yeah.
Troy Baker is the only person trying to make it sound a little bit like Ocelot, because he's putting a twang on it that could lead into old Ocelot's voice.
Yeah.
Troy Baker put more thought into that character than the people who wrote and animated him.
Yeah. Because, I mean, it's something to the point that it's like, you have fucking Revolver Ocelot. He is the crazy cowboy dude who, like, in every single game, he's constantly spinning his guns. He doesn't do a cool thing with his guns once. He's never in a fight. He's never in a conflict. He doesn't shoot anybody. He doesn't spin his guns. This is the dude who fucking fought off a swarm of bees by just twirling his revolvers. He doesn't take it out of his goddamn holster in this whole fucking game. Like, how is that even possible? He has revolver in his fucking name. He doesn't even take one out. Like, it's fucking baffling to me. Like, how is that even fucking possible, you know?
Yeah.
It would be like if you never ate snakes in Snake Eater. It would just be like, it's, what are you doing? Like, it's fucking bizarre.
Or never made a weird sexual pun around it in Snake
Eater.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what it's there for. Anyway. Yeah, the only character I come out of this game with any real affection for is Miller, kind of. Mostly that's because Robin Atkin Downs is a good actor.
Yeah, he's got a really good quality to his voice.
Yeah, and I like the visual design of Miller here, where he's like lost half his body. And
yeah, and he has like that cool coat and hat and sunglasses on. He looks fucking cool in this game.
And at least he has a motivation, which is anger.
Yeah.
It's not particularly well directed.
No.
But at least he has it.
Yeah, and it is something where, like, he gets to be kind of a wet blanket in the game at some points, where he's just, like, because he's just constantly, like being mad at everything, and just, like I said, he just sort of feels like he's grumbling Cypher under his breath constantly. It just gets a little bit annoying. But, like you said, like, he has a motivation, like, that, like makes sense that I can get behind. Even if I think it goes a bit too far, and I just wish they developed it in some way, at least it's there. Which is, again, is more that can be said for, like, Revolver Ocelot, is more that can be said for, like, Psycho Mantis or the Man on Fire, is more that can be said for fucking the main character, like, fake Big Boss. He doesn't have, feels like, any sort of character or any character motivation. Like, yeah, Miller and Quiet are the two best done characters in the whole game.
Yeah. And Quiet is an abomination to feminism.
Yeah, like, oh my god. Like, the Metal Gear franchise has always had a really big issue with how they, like, represent women. But it has somehow gotten worse and worse, I feel, over the course of the games. Of, like, Metal Gear Solid 4 is way worse with that than the ones that came before it. Metal Gear Solid 5 takes it to a whole fucking other level, man. Like,
just... Talk about Pause.
Yes, yeah, okay, yeah. Let's fucking... Yeah, there's some fucking shit with Pause. So Paz is a character, or her real name, Pacific Ocean, which I always find it's like the stupidest fucking name. But she is this character who in Peace Walker I thought was a really interesting character, where she is, feels like she's meant to be, it's not like done super well, but at least it's kind of an interesting ambition for their storytelling, is that she's sort of an allegorical character for peace, like the concept of peace, because that's what Paz means in Spanish. And she's there as sort of like this like very angelic figure in Peace Walker, but over the course of that story, you kind of see some cracks in her persona, and then at the very end of the game, even though it sucks because it's tied into the Cypher stuff, you find out that she's like a double agent, and that she's actually like, you know, she's not really so peaceful after all, and she takes control of your Metal Gear and all this stuff. It's like, some of that twist is not handled very well, but the ideas of the twist are really, really well done. I really like Paz. And then the big kicker is, and if you have Ground Zeroes, you should listen to, they give you all the Paz diaries, which is great, because getting them in actual Peace Walker is a huge pain in the ass, because you have to fight the bosses again. But, like, her diaries that she sort of had, like, were recorded over, like, in the context of the narrative, over the course of her being on Mother Base are great because they recontextualize her character. They give you this sense of what Mother Base was, like Dave, like the stuff that Metal Gear Solid 5 does not do that we'll talk about. But the sense of like the daily life of Mother Base and how all these people on Mother Base interacted and what their roles were. And like, you know, they had birthday parties and they went out fishing and it's like Paz and Kaz like started a fucking band, you know? Like that, and it talks about those and it talks about her sort of dealing with the fact that she is having to sort of like hide her true self and her like gaining some friends and stuff and like being in this life outside of what she had known when she was an agent for Cypher. And like all that stuff is really well done. Paz is voice acted by Tara Strong, who she's like a really, really accomplished voice actor. She's Harley Quinn in the newer Batman Arkham games. Like she is so good, and those audio things are so well produced. They have like backing music and stuff like that. They're very well written, very well acted. Like they make Paz a really interesting character over the course of Peace Walker. If you listen to all the cassette tapes, which you need to if you want to get the character stuff. And then in Ground Zeroes, they do like just the most atrocious shit, where they torture her character. They like put a bomb in her, and then like this is like I like feel awful just even like saying this and having this be recorded, but like at Ground Zero, at the end of Ground Zeroes, you take the bomb out of Paz because you see the scar and they're like, oh, it's fine, it's fine, and she says, no, there's another one in my, and she jumps off and it explodes, the obvious implication being they put a bomb in her vagina, just like,
which you find out very explicitly in Phantom Pain.
Yes, so yes, if that's so that's already, I think, like, hugely problematic with how you're, like, treating that character for what is, in the context of Ground Zeroes, it was, like, exploitative and, like, just gross and completely unnecessary. It, like, did no significant narrative work and just felt like, it just felt misogynistic. And then you get the piece of the Phantom Pain and, like, you hope at the very least that, like, they will take the events at the end of Ground Zeroes and at least, like, do something with them that makes that less worthless of like a narrative choice, like less of a complete waste of a really interesting character, but instead they make it 100 times worse because you can completely miss this, which I was surprised to find out that, like, because I stumbled on it, but I thought that I had just stumbled on it a little bit before the game had introduced me to it, but then like you were basically at the end of the game when like I casually mentioned that Paz was still alive and you had no idea. So like you go into the medical wing. It's like a building, or there's a door on like the top floor or whatever, and she is just sitting there on her bed, or on a bed, like basically naked, because you know her and Quiet are the only two female characters in this game you see, as long as you don't include like random Mother Base soldiers, which they're not characters. Like both of them are like basically completely naked. Just like just saying that, not going to comment anymore on that.
It's awful.
The two female characters are naked for the entire course of the game, and so she's on the bed. She has, like, her big scar, and she has, like, fucking PTSD or whatever, and you have to, and she is, like, trapped in her fake persona as, like, the Angel of Peace and doesn't remember who she actually was, and you have to find all these photos of Mother Base soldiers and give them to her. And this is something that, like, oh, and then when you meet her, they show you this, like, other version of the end cutscene from Ground Zeroes where you find out that they actually took out the vagina bomb before she exploded, but she didn't understand that and jumped out anyways or whatever, and then you get hit with a rocket launcher, and that's what's supposed to have actually happened at the end of Ground Zeroes.
Let's stop for a second there.
Yes.
That is awful on so many levels.
Yes.
One, having that go up so you have to see the guy reach into her vagina and do all this, and that just level of exploitation is so icky.
Yeah.
But also just for the player and playing this, like, just saying, okay, actually, that game you played and paid $30 for and whatever, Ground Zeroes,
yeah,
the ending cutscene just completely lied to you.
Yes.
It's not like there was some kind of clear cause for it, like a David Lynch kind of thing, where you see why a character might have seen something differently.
Exactly,
it's just the game flat out lied.
Yes.
That's never okay.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's a really, it's an incredibly inelegant way of trying to do that sort of, because you've seen this kind of stuff all the time in movies and shit, of like how they try to recontextualize events that you saw, and like you said, that like they'll be like, oh, this is from this character's perspective, so that's why they saw it this way. It's like, no, yeah, it just like literally like lies to you. But then like on top of it, like it's pure exploitation, because it completely takes away what that event was. It makes that completely pointless. Like, it makes it utterly pointless that you added the whole sexual violence component to it. It's like, fucking look. There are certain things that when you put them in a story, things like rape or sexual assault, like that kind of shit, that like are so serious that you cannot just sort of casually put it in there and not have it be important and not have it be like discussed as a thematic component of the story.
You need to know exactly what the fuck you are doing, and if not, back off.
Yeah, it takes a delicate touch, because if you don't, like, it's insulting for a whole number of reasons, and then it's just like it destroys the story, because it's incredibly distracting to have something that graphic be in something that doesn't need it and doesn't deal with it, and it just feels juvenile ultimately. It's just like, but then here, like, this is the part I don't even think you know this part yet, because I only did this morning when I was like looking up what happens when you actually get all the photos for the mother base soldiers, is that the game does this again where actually,
oh my god,
the end of Ground Zeroes did happen, and Paz was just an illusion. A live Paz in Phantom Pain was a phantom the whole time, and that Paz actually did die, and fucking fake Big Boss just couldn't deal with that.
Like, but fake Big Boss wasn't he was there. But, oh my god,
like that.
He has no relationship. Yeah, with Paz.
And it should be clear that that can only you can only do that after you have finished the game, because that's the only point at which all those side ops have unlocked. So like, you, at least you, the player, already know the twist. I'm not sure if it's clear if, like, the fake Big Boss knows that he's fake Big Boss, because that's never made clear about, like, if or when he really finds out about that. But, like, yeah. So, Paz dies at the end of Ground Zeroes. Phantom Pain shows you the end of Ground Zeroes and says that, no, she didn't actually die. And then Phantom Pain later turns around and says, wait, no, just kidding. She really did die from the vagina bomb the entire time. Like, fucking what? Like, that's the fuck. Like, it's the worst payoff for that, like, because it was something where I was like, it's just so insulting to me. As, like, I really think Paz is a really interesting character that, like, if they developed her properly, like, she could have been a really interesting presence in the Phantom Pain. If they had actually, if they had never killed her in Ground Zeroes to begin with, like, she could have been an interesting element in this game if they had carried her forward. But instead, it's like they just take this character that they had done so well with in the past and just fucking jerk her around all over the place. And just, it's like, I don't understand why she's even included in the first place. Because she, it's so easy to even, not even ever find her at all. Like, it's completely inexplicable how they use this character. That for, like, me, who is a huge fan of Peace Walker, like I've said, for me, Metal Gear Peace Walker is my favorite Peace Walker, or Metal Gear game that I've played. To then, like, take that character and just, like, fucking just destroy her in the most disgusting way, like, multiple times, basically. It's like, you can go fucking fuck yourself, Hideo Kojima. Like, that is awful. That is the worst fucking shit you could do as a storyteller. Like, it's just, it's really fucking bad.
I didn't think I could dislike this game anymore,
right?
Until you just told me what you told me.
Right?
I didn't think I could be any more disgusted with some of the decisions this game makes regarding characterization and narrative.
Yeah.
But there's another level.
Right. It's like, it's so bad.
Like Dante's Inferno, we can just keep going.
Yeah, there's always another fucking level of hell.
Okay, here's something I want to ask.
All right, go ahead.
This is a bad game.
Yes.
And what we're going to talk about now is no excuse for these things. The game that was released and shipped and created and directed by Hideo Kojima, as he likes to remind us.
Yeah, a lot.
Is a bad game.
Yes.
It did not work. It is very unsuccessful at what it sets out to do.
Yes.
But how much of the state of this game as it is now do you think was related to just not being finished and maybe had to do with the Konami Kojima split, whatever the cause was? I think very clearly on every level this is a game that just to me shows an incredible lack of polish. Like,
yeah,
the lack of detail in the open world, the lack of stuff that's going on there, the lack of activity at Mother Base, the lack of characterization on Mother Base soldiers, the lack of story going on, the amount of story that just gets thrown into audio logs,
yeah,
the entire chapter 2 clearly just being a thin, barely held together with duct tape shell of whatever it was supposed to be, you know, the final mission just being a cut and paste, you know, control C, control V of something else in the game.
Yeah.
How far away were they from finishing this game? This feels like it needed at least another, like, year of polish and work to be anywhere near presentable.
Yeah, I mean, although it's also, like, it just seems like some of it is, like, the scope and the style of what it is. Like, I just don't even know. It's, like, it's so hard to say, like what, like, the original vision was it for and stuff like that, but it feels like if you look at Chapter 1 and assume that that is Because, like, it feels like Chapter 1 is complete. Like, it doesn't feel like there was a bunch of stuff cut out of Chapter 1 necessarily. Yeah. It just more feels like they never knew what story they were trying to tell in the first place.
Right.
Like, it's not like with Chapter 2, it just feels like there's, like, incomprehensible bits of subplots all over the place. Like, the Skullface story in Chapter 1 is fully told. It's just not told well at all.
Right.
And then on the, but yeah, there's definitely, like, we know that there's stuff cut out of the game, obviously, with the Eli stuff. So obviously that is, like, yeah, it is in a, it feels like it is in a unfinished state in the way that Knights of the Old Republic 2 did to me when I finished it. But at the same time, there's weird parts of, like, where this game, like, technically speaking, is super accomplished and really well polished. Like, I'd never encountered a bug in, like, my entire time of playing this game, which is, like, really astounding. Like, there was never a point where, like, I fell through the world, or, like, a character disappeared, or, like, an objective didn't spawn. Which, like, in a game as long as this, with, like, as many different objectives and missions in it, like, you would expect that to happen kind of at least once. And that never happened. Like, the frame rate is a rock-steady 60 frames per second. Like, that... I think I saw a couple of times the frame rate dropped, and the only reason I noticed it was because I was kind of looking for it at some point, because I was really shocked at how well the game ran. So it's, like... Technically speaking, it is super well made. Like, from, like, the raw, like, it just being a game side of it, like, that stuff is completely rock solid. Like, you would never know if you were, like, taking out all that stuff of, like, the way the story is presented and the way that Chapter 2 is structured for the player. If you ignored all of that, you would have no idea that this game is as much of a mess as it is.
Right. It's right, really and weird. I don't know... Maybe when the split happened, like, 6 months ago, this was just taken out of Kojima's hands, and that we were done with whatever story he was still working on, that's done, and then it was all technical polish from there on out with whatever remnants were left. There could be a dozen explanations.
Yeah, because also, at the same time, like, there's not enough, like, geography in the game to support the amount of story that they would have needed in Chapter 2 to do all that stuff well, regardless. Like,
right.
It's like it would have had to have been in such an unfinished state that, like, there would have had to been a whole other map in that game at the very least to have enough stuff to support, like, what you would need to do.
I just think it's totally possible that Chapter 1 was supposed to be drastically shorter, and it was supposed to and that there's just a bunch of filler missions in there that they put in last minute, and then Chapter 2 would have been meatier. Maybe there would have been a Chapter 3, I don't know, and there would have been more of this, and we would have gone to another open world location. And ultimately what they did is, like, okay, well, this is at least a complete story, so let's add 10 more missions where you go extract someone, because those are really easy to make.
Yeah.
And then Chapter 2 will just take what is sort of done and graft it onto something. The only mission in Chapter 2 that to me feels polished and created is the zombie one.
Yeah, like that. That feels like, even if I don't think, like, narratively it's very interesting, like, it doesn't feel like it's just sort of, like, tacked onto the game the way that, like, the other missions do.
Because, like, the Quiet One, story-wise, clearly they knew what they were wanting to do with it, but then gameplay-wise, you almost would expect it would happen somewhere else or something.
Yeah, because, like, the Quiet, because it's, like, that whole mission is, like, the whole thing is that you're supposed to go in and find Quiet, because she has left the base. And so you go to Afghanistan, and, like, you find a piece of paper on a desk or whatever that's like, this says where they've moved Quiet to. And then it immediately just transitions you into the next mission without letting you go to the helicopter. And then you go walk up to a base, you get a long fucking cutscene where, like, Quiet is almost raped. That happens. It's this place. She stabs a dude in the dick. And then you just fight off a wave of tank after tank after tank. Like, literally, you have to blow up over a dozen tanks. And I had the strongest rocket launcher I could get, and it took, like, 4 rockets to blow up those tanks. Like, the tanks are not fun to fight, and there's, like, no reasonable way I felt for me to, like, go and, like, Fulton them or something like that, because there's also a huge wave of dudes coming at you. So it's like, yeah, the mission of it is just feels like they just gave up, because you're obviously at a location that I have been at, like, 100 fucking times before, doing all the missions and the side ops. And you're just standing there with waves of tanks coming at you. Again, there's no way that you can know going into the mission that you need to go in with all of your vehicle destroying stuff. So it's like, you just have to, at the beginning of every checkpoint, you're like, well, I have to drop in my fucking rocket launcher because I didn't bring it for the mission where I have to go extract the person who's my sniper named Quiet. I kind of assumed that would be an infiltration mission. So yeah.
Yeah.
The story stuff for that is well done. Well done somewhat. But the gameplay part of it, it's probably the mission that I hate the most in the whole game, just, like, how frustrating it was.
So even if, you know, the game...
It's just, it's so weird to talk about, because as you say, it's such a contradiction, because you have this game that has this incredible technical polish to it,
yeah,
and this incredible foundation of just basic controls and gameplay, and then nothing else feels finished, nothing else feels like what it, the ideal version of what it should or is supposed to be,
yeah,
nothing else feels developed.
And
so
the whole,
it's like,
game feels like hollow to,
yeah,
me. Like, the systems and the gameplay are really well developed, but like everything they ask you to do with it and like the world that they have made just feels completely empty.
Yeah. I've played games that were much worse received than this that I feel like you can get way more enjoyment out of because they're at least not hollow or they're at least not incoherent or whatever.
Yeah, like something that feels like it's more than the sum of its parts kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's like Metal Gear Solid 5 feels like...
There's no sum.
The Metal Gear Solid 5 feels like it is the exact sum of its parts. It just happens that like a lot of those parts are negative numbers, you know?
Yes.
It's just like it's dragging itself down because so many of the individual parts are so poorly done that the one thing it does really well doesn't matter in the face of like everything else that sucks.
So we can conclude at the very least this game was severely compromised somewhere in development, I feel like.
Yeah, in some way, at some point.
And who knows how much. I mean, I do think it's totally possible that some of the weird decisions are just Kojima being fucking weird and not getting...
Yeah, because there's a lot of the bad stuff in this game. It presents women and stuff like that.
Yeah, no.
Like,
that's...
there's no way to get around... Like, that's not like, oh, it's Konami's fault.
No,
like,
that's Kojima. Yeah. But anyway, so the game is compromised. Here's another question.
Okay.
How has the game been as passionately received as it has been when, you know, our opinion, and I think probably this is going to be a growing opinion, I'm just guessing, as people finish the game, is that it's a mess.
Yeah, like, I have, since our last podcast, gone online more. Since, like, after I finished the game, I didn't have to be afraid of, like, finding out anything about the ending, because I didn't want to get spoiled. It's like, now that I know what the ending is, like, it would not have mattered to me if that had actually been spoiled.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, there is a segment of, like, especially a lot of Metal Gear fans are rejecting this game pretty hard for the same reasons that we're rejecting it. Because it's something that, like, I was really surprised that we both had the same opinions on the game. Because it was something where I feel like we both did the majority of our playing of this game over, like, Labor Day weekend, and we didn't see each other at all.
No.
Over that whole weekend. So it was like, when you came back, like, over the course of that Labor Day weekend was, like, I had my highest part with the game, and then I had my low, and it was, like, coming around.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it was, like, it's like, when you came back, I felt like, I was like, oh, man, I'm like, I wonder if Jonathan's just going to love this game. And I'm like, oh, like, this is going to be an awkward thing to do, like, with the podcast of, like, I don't know. And then, like, it was, like, so liberating to find out, like, we have the exact same fucking opinion on this goddamn game. I was so surprised because the game has, like, unanimously great reviews. Like, I don't think I saw a review that was below, like, 9 out of 10, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
and even the unscored ones tend to drift towards positive.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, like, the critical reception of it is unbelievably positive, and so it's weird. Like, I don't feel like we've ever had this situation on this podcast before, where we both were negative on something that, like, we both simultaneously had the opposite opinion of, like, the overall critical opinion of something.
Yeah.
I don't think that's ever happened before.
It's a case where I don't think it's ever happened before, and it's also a case. I mean, we've had things where, like, people will like a Doctor Who episode, but we can at least explain, okay, those are fan-favorite characters,
yeah,
and they're not really for us, but I get it, whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm never going to be mad at people for enjoying Doctor Who. You should enjoy it however you want.
Yeah.
And I can always get that. This is a case where, as you say, it's a complete separation between the general critical reception and maybe our reception of it. And on another level, I can come up with certain explanations for how it's getting the reviews it's getting, but on another level, it's not even down to subjectivity. I just don't get it, some of the just absolute glowing, because I don't know how you can enjoy sitting in a helicopter as long as you do in this game.
Yeah.
I don't know how you can enjoy having to traverse 5,000 fucking meters of nothing in the slowest moving vehicles and horses. I don't know how you can enjoy, you know, going back to Mother Base and going to the R&D platform to do target practice and it takes 20 minutes to get there.
Yeah.
I don't know how you can enjoy those things that are, honestly, those make up the bulk of the game.
Yeah, like, this game wastes your time.
Yes.
Fucking constantly.
Yeah.
It is infuriating. And it feels like it fucking rubs it in your face because it has all these, once you, like, get past the first set of upgrades, like, it has all this shit that just takes time. Like, it's not, like, it's just you fucking buy the base development expansion. It's like, this is gonna take hours, 2 fucking hours to finish.
Of like, real game time. Not,
yeah, the, not like, I don't get to turn off the game and leave. Like, I like you have to leave the game running. Or, like, some of the, if you do some of the online stuff, like, some of those, I did, like, one of the online combat deployments because I thought, like, oh, like, these have really good rewards. I saw it. I, like, clicked on it and was like, this is, like, at least this is real world time, but it takes 2 days. It took 2 days. Like, I finished the game before that fucking combat deployment fucking finished. Like, that thing finished today. It's like, what the fuck? Like, it feels like there's just that weird side of it where it's just like, oh my god. Like, I bought, like, that this, like, wormhole upgrade for the Fulton that is a, like, really expensive in-game upgrade. That thing took, like, 2 hours. 2 hours for this one upgrade. It's like, by the time it finished, I got to use it in one side op, and then I finished the game. It's like,
yeah,
this game just like it's rubbing in your face constantly. It's like sending you back to Mother Base, like kicking you out of the field to go back to Mother Base to watch like a tiny little cutscene that nothing happens in. And it's like now I have to go back out and do like those other side ops because there's nothing else for me to do in Chapter 2. So it's like the number of times that Chapter 2 interrupted me while I was trying to just do like 5 side ops in a row really quickly to like kick me back to Mother Base, it was fucking infuriating. And every time it happens, I have to like go through all these loading screens, I have to like go through my loadout again, I have to spend like 50,000 GMP to go deploy, I have to spend like all these fucking plants and all my resources and shit if I want to, like I have to start stripping out the stuff that I'm using because I don't want to use all this fucking, all these resources every time I have to deploy to go fucking extract one prisoner and then you're going to kick me back to Mother Base. Like it just wastes my time constantly and it's the most infuriating thing.
And this is what I'm saying is that usually when we talk about controversial stuff on the podcast or just when I review something that where I have a different opinion to the majority or whatever, I totally understand it because on one level, subjective critical opinion is just a part of life and that's fine and that's actually good. That's part of what being human is and it's great.
Yeah.
But also it's like when we have, like let's say the Man of Steel discussion.
Yeah.
I get why you don't like the movie and you get why I like the movie.
Yes.
And we're talking about the same movie. Like we can talk about the same scenes and show our interpretations and it's not like we don't understand where each other is coming from.
Exactly, yeah.
With this, I look at the general critical opinion and that whole spiel you just went through, that doesn't even appear in the reviews.
Yeah.
That there's all this time wasting. That I honestly do think if you broke out time playing the actual meat of the game versus just wasting time in the game, there is more time wasted than played.
Yeah.
And that's, those sorts of things just don't appear. They're not talked about. It's like people are playing a different game than I am. That's where it confuses me.
Yeah. Like, it's definitely, it's, yeah.
I mean, we talked about, did critics just not finish the game? Because I could get, maybe if you just got to the end of Chapter 1, assumed that was the end, you could write a generally positive review. I don't see how you could write a glowing review, but whatever. Maybe you like hearing Huey say Sahelanthropus more than I do.
Sahelanthropus.
Yeah. But, I don't know. Do you have any other thoughts on it? Or,
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it is something where I feel like, I mean, because it's just, because it's not even just the story stuff that, like I said, like, it wastes your time constantly. I also think, like, a huge disappointing part of the game is the Mother Base stuff.
Yeah.
It just feels, like, completely undeveloped. That also, like, I feel like, even if you don't, like, because I can see giving it, like, a really glowing review. If you're someone that just doesn't care about story in video games, like, I don't, like, for me, the story is really important, and it gives, like, the weight, like, a certain weight and momentum to what I'm doing, and it gives a sense of pacing to the game. But I definitely understand that there are people out there that, like, just want to skip past cutscenes and just want to do all the gameplay stuff.
But you can't skip past the helicopter ride.
Exactly. And you can't, like, you can't ignore Mother Base, I feel like. You can't ignore the fact that, like, there's this huge part of the game that, like, you're building up Mother Base. It is everything that you are doing in the game. Same with Peace Walker. It's like you're, everything is filtered back to, I'm trying to build up my fucking Diamond Dogs or MSF. Like, I'm trying to create this mercenary haven. You know, that's what, like, the game is really about because you're constantly fultoning resources. You're fultoning dudes. Fultoning, like, bears for some reason because someone decided to pay you if you fulton this bear.
I was so mad you didn't get a pet bear.
Yeah. Yeah, D-Bear. D-Bear would have been really good. But, yeah, like, all the stuff you're doing feels like it's constantly going back to Mother Base, and they're always sending you back to Mother Base in a way that feels like when you, because you go onto Mother Base and you're walking around Mother Base, like, you're building new platforms that, like, appear that you can go to. I mean, there's nothing there. You can go to them. And so it feels like it was meant to be a much more developed version of what is in Peace Walker, where all that you do all that stuff, but it's all just in menus and you never see it because it's a PSP game. You can't, like, you know, have, like, that full experience. But then when you, like, in MGS5, like, you go onto Mother Base, and, like, for the first, like, 12 hours of this game, I was so fucking desperate. I mean, this is how I stumbled onto Paz. I was so desperate for there to be something on Mother Base to do that was not, like, random fucking target, like, practice missions that, like, I don't give a shit about. Like, how is it that you don't get to go visit Miller, you know? How is it that you don't get to go visit Revolver Ocelot? How is it that you don't get to go, like, see what, like, where do we keep D-Horse and what is he, like, what is D-Horse up to, you know? Is D-Horse, like, just pooping all over the place like he does in missions? Like, I want to know. Like, I want to see. Like, I want to go, like, walk into a room in Mother Base and have Kaz and have Revolver Ocelot having an argument about what happened in the last mission, you know? Like, when I extract all these fucking child soldiers, where do they go? Where are they on Mother Base? It is fucking completely inexplicable to me that you have built this whole Mother Base system, that you have, like, fully modeled it, that you can go walk around on it, you have all your troops walking around on Mother Base and stuff. It's astounding to me that you went to the fucking bother of, like, doing all that stuff, and then you don't put anything on it. Like, it's so crazy that, like, the only things you can do is you can go visit Paz, which is, like, nothing. Like, you can go, every time you do one of those wandering Mother Base soldier side ops, you give her a picture, and she says a couple of lines to you, then she drops a picture and says, oh, my head hurts, Snake, can you visit me some other time? And I'm like, yeah, okay, and then you walk awkwardly stumble out of the room. You can do that. You can go look at Quiet, who's always, like, fucking lying on her bridge with her, like, bra undone, because that's what Quiet does all the time for some reason, and she's always listening to random music that plays, that I'm always really frustrated because you can't take the cassettes. It's like, how come Mother Base has all this music unlocked that I haven't found out in the world yet? So you can go, like, look at Quiet if you want to, if you're a creep. And then you can go to the hangar that Huey's in, and you can walk in there. There's nothing to do in there. He says, hey, Snake. And that's it. And he says that every time you walk in there, nothing else happens. He's making the walker gear that never amounts to anything. And then once you see the walker gear and it's just kind of sitting there, you can walk out of the room. You can go visit your bear in his cage on the animal conservation platform. You can go look at the Man of Fire's corpse on the quarantine platform if you really want to. That's everything you can do on Mother Base. Like, there's nothing there.
There's literally no incentive to go back to one of the three areas in the game.
Yeah.
There's no incentive. So it means that every time you're pulled back to Mother Base, which should be the, you know, narrative and thematic hub of the game, it's annoying every yes. time they make you do yes. it. And it was it's so to the point you don't want to go there that later in the game, when I think Miller says, you know, come back to Mother Base, but he doesn't pull you back. Like, you just know you have to go there at some point to do a mission. Yeah. I didn't know how to go back to Mother Base from the helicopter. I honestly couldn't figure yeah. it out. And now I saw that there was a button. But what I did is I had to go to a side op and, like, do that and then try to kind of finagle it to get there. Because I had no idea, like, why would I ever want to go back to Mother Base?
Yeah, there's no, like, it's, they have that weird, like, shower mechanic or whatever that's, yeah. like, kind of, like, is, like, the cheapest way to try to incentivize you. Like, I never, like, let it go to the point that I don't even know what happens if you don't. Like, I don't understand what the mechanic was. I just felt like I should probably be doing it periodically when they, like, just randomly dump me out here.
Yeah, it's stupid. And, like, it would be like if in Mass Effect, the Normandy was, like, 20 times bigger on the inside, but none of your characters were there.
Yeah,
none
exactly.
of your soldiers were there. It was somehow, and you're just constantly wondering, like, man, the Normandy is supposed to house a whole crew. Where are they? Just like when you're on Mother Base, it's like, I know I have about 1,000 soldiers. Where the fuck are they?
Yeah, it's like you have, like, the same 5 people wandering around on each of the decks, and that's it.
Yeah.
And I also love that it's like you start developing those other platforms. Like when you upgrade your medical area, like, it adds another little hex thingy that, like, with a little bridge to it. And for the first couple of times I did that, I would always go visit the new platform that got made, and it would just be like, this just looks like all the extra platforms you make all look like the exact same extra platforms. They're all basically empty with a couple of, like, weird metal-like ladders and stuff around, and then a bunch of cargo containers on them. That's what all of them are. There's nothing new there. Like fuck, like, you know, this would be weird. I don't know if they would ever do this, but, like, you might as well just, like, just to put some life into it, put, like a ping-pong table or something that you could go up and, like, fucking play ping-pong with Revolver Ocelot, you know? Like, put something. Like, it doesn't have to be a mini game necessarily, but, like, put something. But like what you said was exactly right. It would be like if in Mass Effect you went back to the Normandy and very specifically none of the characters were there. That's like you have like your random like people that are like hitting the buttons on the command crew and stuff, but you can't go visit Garrus. Like where Garrus is, I have no idea. You can't go visit Tali. Like it's like she's supposed to be with you. She's supposed to be this character that's like working for you, that like you're supposed to have this relationship with. But where she is, what she's doing, I have no idea. Like, think of how much better the story and characters would be in this game if you could go visit Miller, and after every couple of missions, there was, like, a new scene with him. Or, like God forgive, like just put a fucking dialogue option, like, thing in the game that lets you talk to the characters and give some dialogue choices. Fucking make Kiefer Sutherland work for that money you paid him. Like, do something, you know? Do something with the characters and do something with the setting. Because it comes down to that when you don't make me, like, care about Mother Base, when you don't put anything there of interest in Mother Base, that's why when I get to the mission where I have to kill all the zombified Mother Base soldiers, that's why I shot the first motherfucker I saw in that mission and, like, failed the mission the first time because I just assumed I was supposed to kill them and did not care enough to, like, not shoot them. Like, I didn't want to wait to the point where they show you the cutscene that then it's like, okay, now it's okay to kill them. I was just like, okay, I'm just going to go and kill them. Like, I don't care. Like, why do I give a shit about shooting fucking, like, Wiggly Octopus or whatever the fuck this goddamn, like, random person's codename is? Like, I don't even know if that correlates to an actual staff member. Like, I don't know if I shoot this person and it says, like, heroism decreased by, like, negative 30. Like, I don't know what heroism stat is, but you, like, every time you shoot them, it says that. Like, I don't know if that means that, like, my R&D team went down one or something. Like, I have no idea. Because I don't give a fuck. Because I don't care about this Mother Base. I cared way more about the one in Peace Walker because it was fucking abstracted enough. And the cassette tapes they had made you feel like there was, like, a life being lived with those characters on Mother Base. Even if you didn't get experience it, like, firsthand gameplay-wise. Like, you were cognizant of it and, like, stuff was happening on Mother Base because if you were listening to those cassette tapes, you were hearing about it. Like, I cared way more about that Mother Base that I never saw one iota of in actual game terms than I do about the one that I could spend hours wandering around aimlessly if I wanted to. Like, it's a complete, utter failing of game design that's, like, one of the perfect examples of where, like, if you had done it well, it would have made the narrative so much more effective. But since you fucked it up, it made the narrative way more limp than it ever was going to be, you know?
Yep. I mean, so getting to the conclusion of all this.
Yeah.
I'm going to put it this way about the story. Like, the ultimate disappointment as someone who has liked certain Metal Gear games in the past. I think this game has killed me from saying I'm a Metal Gear fan. It's like two or three games.
Yeah, it broke the trend of the odd ones being the best ones.
It did.
Unless it doesn't if you count Peace Walker.
Yes, you can
count
do that.
Peace Walker, the actual Metal Gear Solid 5, this is 6. Then the odd Metal Gear games are the best ones.
Yes.
And they only get better.
Yeah. Anyway... But in terms of the story, I mean,
yeah.
This is the area in the game it felt like the whole series had been coming to trajectory-wise. This is a period, 1984 to 94, where you could tell the story of how Big Boss decided to kind of go crazy and start Outer Heaven, but in a very negative way with nukes and everything. You could tell how he met and took Solid Snake under his wing.
Yeah.
You could tell how Liquid Snake sort of became, you know, warped and angry and decided to do all these terrible things. You could learn about sort of the formation of the Patriots and how Ocelot decided he was going to kind of work with them, but to double-cross them.
Yeah.
You could tell, you know, how what happened to Miller to get to the point where he gets assassinated by Liquid Snake Metal Gear Solid 1. There are so many great stories you could tell. You could tell all of them. You could tell one of them. There's nearly limitless possibilities that have been set up. And they told not only none of that, they didn't tell a story at all.
Yeah.
They took all this potential, and I include in that the gameplay of this that was introduced in Ground Zeroes, where it was so exciting, because Ground Zeroes is such a fun game to play. I love the story stuff aside in Ground Zeroes. I think Ground Zeroes is just an awesome game to play.
Yes.
It's you can play it over and over again, and it's always fun. It's a really good game. You have all of that. You have limitless potential, and this game did nothing. It is less than nothing. I don't even know what like grade I would give it on a scale, because I don't... It amounts to absolutely zero.
Yeah.
It is, in their definition, it is the real cipher because it is zero. Metal Gear got to one, it got to two, and then it went back to zero.
And now it has to get to one again before it becomes zero a third time. I don't know.
Yes.
They're a weird metaphor. Yeah. No, like, you're completely right that it's something where, like, it's such a shame that they had... they created such an amazing gameplay system that, like, if you want to really enjoy it, you can just go play Ground Zeroes and, like, cut out all the fat of this game. Because it is something where, like you said, there is no story. Like, it's just, like, and that's not okay. Like, that's not for, like, maybe it's just a taste thing, but I feel like if, like, a video game like this, you need to have a story, or it just feels mindless. Like, I can enjoy it, like, and I did. Like, I enjoyed it for, like, 15 hours, and I'm fine with that. Like, I'm fine with playing a game like that, that long, as long as the mechanics are fun, with no real story presented.
Like an indie game.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, I've played probably about that much Galaxy, and there's, like, no story in Galaxy almost whatsoever, but the mechanics are really fun and engaging. But, like, you cannot ask me to play, like, 60 hours of this fucking game and then just insult me every step of the way by, like, fucking throwing these characters that I know in front of me and doing nothing with them, not developing them, not putting, a plot in there. And then also, like, there is something to be said of just, like, the expectations of this being Metal Gear Solid 5, this being a game in this franchise well known for its story, like famous and infamous for its story, you know? Like taking that, this final entry in that, and doing nothing with it. Like you said, this is, and for me, like, especially, like, this is the shit that I'm actually interested in Metal Gear. Like, it's the part that, to me, when I think about Metal Gear, is the most fascinating of, like, of the relationship between Solid Snake and Liquid Snake and Big Boss, like, the L'Enfant Terrible project. Like, I find that fascinating, and I find the idea of Big Boss as a character so interesting. This idea of this guy who is a soldier who decides that he's going to completely break from the concept of nations and make a, like, a nation of warriors, a nation of people who live to do battle, who do not do battle for ideological reasons or for patriotic reasons. They just do it because that's what they do, because that's who they are. Like, it's a very interesting concept to me that, like, I feel like has been kind of done in, like, samurai movies and stuff like that, but has never been done in, like, a modern context that, like, brings in this whole sort of, like sociopolitical aspect into it with the Cold War. Like, those ideas are so amazing. But again with Metal Gear, it's like there's some good fucking ideas and they fail on the execution. And it's just amazing to me that this time they failed the fucking hardest when they had the best fucking material to work with. Like, the most rich lore you possibly could hope for, and they fail it every single step of the way.
Yeah, I don't think there's much more to say beyond that. I can't think of a more disappointing or worse AAA game I've played in years. I don't even know where I would go with that. Because even if it's... I didn't play a lot of Assassin's Creed Unity, but at least then I get to go, like, stab dudes with my assassin stick, whatever, you know? If you like that series, you'll keep liking it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, like, what are the big bombs that we would have even played that would come close to this? And this isn't going to be a bomb. It's huge seller, critical success. It's probably going to get some Game of the Year awards, which is again baffling.
Yeah. And it's like, man, like, it's such a fucking bummer, because I loved Peace Walker, and I thought there's some stuff, like, in the last cutscene of Peace Walker that sets up Metal Gear Solid 5 that seems fucking fascinating, where, like, MSF has finally been, like, fully realized, and fucking Snake is basically saying, like, now is when the shit starts, because now that, like, we have gotten this big, now that the world knows that we have this Metal Gear... Now that the world knows that we are this nuclear power, that means that people are going to start coming after us. And it's like, that's fucking sounds awesome.
It's
and
a then, great scene. Yeah. I've seen it.
And then Ground Zeroes is like the stuff with Paz aside, like, if you take that part out of it, the story in Ground Zeroes is cool. Like, the how you infiltrate the base, and at the same time, Skullface is leaving to go be, like, that, like, fake UN thing to, like, inspect your nuclear facilities. Like, that whole side of it, and then you go back to Mother Base and it's fucking on fire. Again, if you just take out the weird pause stuff, like, that stuff is fucking awesome. And Ground Zero's gameplay is amazing. And then you get to Phantom Pain, and it's like the first, like, 12 hours are really good. And then it's like, you slowly dawns on you, there's no story in this game. They're not doing anything with this. They're not, like, utilizing any of this stuff. And then you find Eli, and you're like, oh, it's Liquid Snake. Like, maybe they'll do something interesting with this. And it's like, that becomes the biggest disappointment of all. It's like, they have all these chances to make this amazing story, and they fucked it up every single time.
Yep. 30 years of building to nothing.
Yeah. It's the biggest joke of all.
Let's end on a positive note.
All right.
Sean, today, September 13th is when we're recording this. I don't think I'm releasing this until Monday the 14th, but the 13th. This is the 30th year of Super Mario Brothers in America, with that game coming out. So what's your favorite Mario game? Let's just really quickly. Those are great games. Everyone loves Mario.
Super Mario 64 for me. Because okay. that was the Mario one 64. I played the most of. Like, I also really like World because I played a bit of that with my friend who had a Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
But yeah, Super Mario 64 is where it's at. Like, that's...
Yeah. There's a lot of great ones. I think I go back to 64 too, both because of historical importance. It's a game that changed the way games are made, and yeah. you can still go back to it and enjoy it just as much as ever, I think.
Yeah.
It really does not age poorly. Even if the graphics, you know, look worse, it's still just as fun to play. And I think all of the great Mario games that have come since, like Galaxy and 3D Land and stuff, build off that, and that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that one, too. In terms of, like, the 2D ones, I always go back and forth what my favorite one is. I really do love the original Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, it's 30 years old today. It's very simple, but it has a charm to it because of its simplicity.
It's really good. And I think the ones that came after, like, Mario 3 is a masterpiece. Mario World is a masterpiece. Yeah. I mean, these are... This was... To think that Miyamoto made all these games, that guy... churned out, you know, between that and Ocarina of Time, which is really yeah. the last one he's fully directed. I guess he did Pikmin.
Yeah.
But, you know...
Pikmin's
that,
good.
Yeah, Pikmin's like good. Pikmin. That guy just, I think, you think of the amount of innovation he had in that one series, and then yeah. you think of Zelda 2.
Yeah.
That's incredible to me, but yeah. So that's a series. That is a series that has gone 30 years, and is as good as ever. It's really fun yeah. still. If you like Mario...
I mean, man, like, if you think about, if you're comparing, like Metal Gear Solid 5 and Super Mario 64,
yeah.
like... The hub world in 64, that castle, like, that's one of those things that makes that game so good.
Yes.
Is because, like, there's all these hidden secrets and cool shit to do as mm-hmm. you're, like, slowly unlocking it. Like, Metal Gear Solid 5 should have, like, fucking Kojima should have played a lot more Super Mario 64 before he made that game.
Yes, absolutely. So.
Mario, still doing it. Still kicking ass.
Absolutely. I am looking forward.
30 years later.
I am looking forward to another 30 years of Mario. I hope Metal Gear is just fucking dead and buried after this because. This was an ignominious death for a once great franchise, and it's good fucking riddance at this point.
Yeah. And you know what, Jonathan? Like you said, you're looking forward to another 30 years of Super Mario, but like now that Super Mario Maker has come out, it's just infinite. It's just Mario levels are just like they will never stop being made. So it's like, you know, so people listening to this, like if you have a Wii U and you also have an Xbox One, a PS4, a PC capable of playing games, don't fucking get Metal Gear Solid 5. Like, just fucking spare yourself the trouble. Go get Super Mario Maker and just
Absolutely.
Have fun. Like, enrich yourself creatively and just fucking enjoy your life. And don't make the mistakes that I made and you made playing this fucking piece of shit game.